The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Topeka Capital Journal or its parent company, Morris Communications. Now, stay tuned for the news, followed by today's webcast of Jim Cates at CJ Online.
Good morning. Today is Friday, April 24th. Here's just a look of news that you can read in more detail in the Topeka Capital Journal and on CJ Online. Flags across the state will be flown at half staff from sunup to sundown Saturday in honor of fallen soldier Private Richard A. Dewater, Governor Kathleen Sebelius said Thursday. Department of Defense officials said Dewater, 21, of Topeka, was on a dismounted U.S. Army patrol as part of the Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan when he was fatally wounded by an improvised explosive device on April 15th. His funeral is planned for Saturday morning at Roseburg National Cemetery in Oregon. Dewater called Grants Pass, Oregon, his home. Governor Kathleen Sebelius' decision to veto Thursday a bill amending Kansas law on late-term abortions occurred at a critical juncture in her bid to become a cabinet secretary in the administration of President Barack Obama. Sebelius, who supported abortion rights, but says she personally opposes the method of birth control, said the vetoed legislation likely would have been ruled unconstitutional by federal courts. Veto of the abortion measures triggered ridicule and praise from people on opposite ends of the political spectrum. A Topeka woman who died Wednesday night in a motorcycle accident near Lake Shawnee was a registered nurse and the mother of a high school student. Leanna J. Rain, 45, was a passenger on a motorcycle involved in a three-vehicle accident shortly before 8 p.m. at Southeast 45th and West Edge Road. She was transported to a Topeka hospital with serious injuries and later pronounced dead. Shawnee County Sheriff officials said Rain was unresponsive at the scene. Rain is survived by a Kyle Rain, her 15-year-old son. Sheriff officials said Mark Ulridge, 50, was driving the motorcycle when it and a 2004 Ford F-150 pickup truck collided at Southeast 45th and West Edge. The motorcycle then struck a 2002 Ford Taurus. Ulridge was transported to Stormontville Regional Health Center with serious injuries. He later was flown to the University of Kansas Medical Center in Kansas City, Kansas for surgery. Stay tuned for Jim Cates at CJ Online.
You got money to save, you better roll with a plan, cause with an IRA you'll get the tax relief. You better roll it on over,
roll it on over,
roll it on over,
roll it on over.
Make your money and move and roll it over to Roger Shoemaker. You better rack in your brains trying to find an aid to lend a helping hand for your retirement plans. You better roll it on over,
roll it on over,
let Roger take over. Make your money and move and roll it over to Roger Shoemaker.
Many people are looking at retiring or in transition between jobs. If this sounds like you, roll it on over and call me, Roger Shoemaker, to receive your complimentary, independent rollover portfolio strategy analysis at 785-228-0222. That's 228-0222. Securities offered through Next Financial Group, member FINRA SIPI.
Make your money and move and roll it over to Roger Shoemaker.
Topeka Collegiate, Topeka's only independent school, treats every child as gifted. Each student is encouraged to excel in a caring, small-class learning environment guided by humanitarian principles. At Topeka Collegiate, children fall in love with learning. Enrollment is limited. Call 228-0490 or visit our website at topekacollegiate.org. Topeka Collegiate School, educating children for life.
Hi, this is Carl Edwards here for RAD, the entertainment industry's voice for road safety. You want to make a difference? It's simple. Be responsible. Plan ahead. Designate before you celebrate. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You wouldn't expect your child to jump on a bike without learning how to safely ride first. Why would you let him ride an ATV without proper training? Riding an ATV is not as easy as it looks. You've got to learn the ropes before you hit the trails. The best way to learn how to ride is to take a training class. Many are free. Too many riders have been killed or seriously injured on ATVs. Don't become a statistic. Take knowledge to the extreme. Log on today to ATVsafety.gov.
It's time for Jim Cates at CJ Online. News, opinion, interviews, and community conversation, live and online. Join Jim and his guests at the Roundabout Cafe, 2025 Southwest Urish Road, or send in a question by calling 785-295-1193 or emailing jim.cates at cjonline.com. And now, from the Topeka Capital Journal and CJ Online, here's the Dean of Talk Radio in Topeka, Jim Cates.
Good morning. We're at the Roundabout Cafe. This is going to be the last day, Trish. We're going to be here this week. Today is Friday, and today is payday. Payday.
Yay for Friday.
Yes, we got a little pittance today. Yes, we do.
I haven't checked yet. I haven't checked yet. I'm afraid to.
Well, as long as it clears. You know, check cleared 2 weeks ago. I guess we can't ask for anything.
That's
for
right.
Yep. Paycheck that clears.
Yep.
Hey, this is going to be a big weekend. Well, not a big weekend. But they are having a pancake feed out at the Combat Air Museum tomorrow from 7 to noon. And this is the Combat Air Museum's, this is the big fundraiser. This is the biggie.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of media personalities out. I'm going to go out and flip pancakes from around 7 to 8 tomorrow morning.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm going to do that tomorrow.
Well, good.
I've been doing this for off and on for 5-6 years,
uh-huh.
I guess. And it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's, they get quite a crowd out.
Oh, I
and they're going to have a lot of the elected officials, most of the city council members in the past have volunteered.
Uh-huh.
They'll have a gubernatorial candidate or two, I'm sure, out there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a fun deal.
That's
and
good.
I'm going to be out there for an hour, 7 to 8. But, folks, again, it's all-you-can-eat pancakes, and that's tomorrow at the Combat Air Museum. And that's Hangar Building number 602 at the Forbes Field, and that's at the far south end if you've never been to the Combat Air Museum. Bring the kids out with you. They'll love it. There are so many antique and old planes out there to see, and you can crawl in some of them. It's just a fun, fun day. So that's coming up tomorrow. And Thomas Lushman just emailed us, I understand.
Yes.
And they are having a garage sale today.
A huge garage sale.
Is that today and tomorrow?
Today, tomorrow. Today.
Okay. Well, let's plug it for today and tomorrow then. And this is going to be at the Lushman Farm. Truck Hinge is what it's called.
Uh-huh.
They've got a big rock concert coming up as well in a few weeks.
Oh, it's today and all weekend, it says.
Okay, an all weekend garage sale, and that's 2 miles east of Billard Airport on Kincaid Road. Just
right.
Go out Kincaid Road, 2 miles east of Billard, and you are there. Okay. Hey, we've got a good show coming up at 9 o'clock. Hopefully it's going to be a good show. We're due for one. John Arnold's coming in. And John, by the way, is going to be a weekly guest on the Media Roundtable. And coming in with John, we've got Denise Eck. She's the news director for TV 49. She's going to be joining us, so that's going to be fun to have Denise back on the show. And we'll be talking about the big stories of the week. Trish, what do you think the biggest story of the week's been?
In
your opinion, what would it be?
Probably Sebelius.
Think Sebelius?
Yeah.
That would be your big story of the week, huh?
Well, no, it's not mine. Let's
huh?
see. What's my... Oh, I think my the one that I've, you know, really paid attention to was the motorcycle wreck, actually, because since we ride motorcycles.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was bad.
Yeah, that's tough. I was in a motorcycle wreck years and years and years ago. That kind of cured me. You know, I want four wheels under me now.
Yeah. No, we ride. Rick's got a big, full-dress motorcycle, but...
Yeah.
I always wear my helmet. I don't
That's
like it,
idea.
But I wear it.
Well, I was at a crash, years ago when I was a kid. And the guy that was driving, I was on the back, and the guy that was driving, he has since passed away
uh-huh.
due to, in large part, to his injuries
oh,
that
really?
He suffered on that accident.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, car pulled out. We hit the car broadside. I flew about 50 foot over the car, landed in a gravel pit.
Yuck.
And I came out of this with 5 stitches
yeah.
in my ankle.
Wow.
You know, just nothing.
I've had the...
He went under the car, and the guy driving the car panicked, backed his car up, and ran over this guy's leg. And
oh, good
just,
Lord.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A mess.
I've had the good old muffler burns before, but no wrecks.
But you've... Well, the muffler burns, I've had those, too. That's the reason I'm going to stay in four wheels. I'm just not into the two wheels anymore.
Oh, I love it.
I guess that comes with advanced age. Bob Snyder just walked in. And,
the Poets Club.
How are you doing, Bob?
Well, I'm doing great, Jim. How are you doing?
Poets Club are meeting today. We've got our media roundtable. We've got Denise Eck coming in at 9 o'clock, news director for TV 49. I'm not sure you've met her.
No.
John Arnold's here. John's going to be with us every Friday.
Oh, you know, okay.
Because he writes a great column for the Metro, and, you know, with his experience in city government,
you know,
he's good.
I miss the Metro, having to go to nothing but paid.
Yeah, I do, too.
Because I just, Kevin's article.
Kevin McGinney, Room 235, great columnist.
Great columnist.
Very opinionated, which I love. I think that's great.
Well, Jim, you're not opinionated.
No,
never have
not.
Been, never will be.
No, never will be.
Yeah,
I'm not
going to
do that.
So. What do you think? I haven't been able to talk to you lately, but on the fact of the bus wanting to increase the mill rate.
That's going to be one of our top stories. In fact, I was just asking Trish what she considered the top story of the week, because that's what we want to talk about at 9 o'clock.
Okay, well...
Trish said Sebelius, you know, the confirmation process, which is interesting as can be. And, you know, I'm going to get into that at 9 o'clock as well. For the life of me, I don't understand Pat Roberts' position on this. You know, because Pat has said that he is absolutely strongly pro-life. What have you run on that for 30 years
that.
Now?
But, you know, there's a lot of Republicans who just want to get Kathleen out.
Yeah, but out of the state into a national office, if they really felt Kathleen Sebelius isn't doing a good job, why would you expose her to 300 million people as opposed to 2.5 million? That's
because we're exposed
well.
To a bunch of others just like her.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, put that out in West Texas, you kind of separate the bulls. You know, so.
What is Bob Dole doing, and why is Bob Dole involved in this? He's had more FaceTime over the past week, you know, hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder with Governor Sebelius. Why is he involved in this?
Well, that I guess that'd be pretty obvious to me is that. They want to show bipartisan support to the lady, to the governor. So, I mean, that would be the big thing. And Bob, you know, when I lived in Texas, I didn't agree with him. When I moved to Kansas, I don't agree with him.
Well, you know,
I just wonder if I'm even a GOP guy anymore.
Beginning to wonder what I am. You know, and abortion is not one of my big issues, frankly.
Right.
You know, because I don't come from the religious conviction side of it.
Oh, you don't have to come from the religious conviction side of it, though.
But, you know, I've got a tremendous amount of respect for those that are involved in the pro-life community that are fighting for something they believe in. And it doesn't bother me, you know, a pro-choice candidate. I liked Nancy Boyda for a lot of reasons, and Nancy was unabashedly pro-choice and happened to be a minister. You know, her degree was in theology, and she's taken a look possibly at going back into the ministry at some point in time. So, but having said that, it bothers me the hypocrisy. You've got Bob Dole, you've got Pat Roberts, that for years have professed to be pro-life. Now, I don't care if they're pro-life, pro-choice, but if you say you're pro-life, stand up for what you believe in. Don't be one of the two Republicans that voted to get Sebelius out of committee onto the Senate floor, which Pat Roberts did. You know, Pat Roberts has been pushing this nomination process all along at every step of the way. To me, that is terribly hypocritical.
You know, it's amazing because I think lots of people, and let's just go back to the theology of Nancy Boyd and her being not pro-choice, not being pro-life, but I would say pro-killing myself. But you know,
and I understand
a lot of times,
that. And
a
I
lot
respect
of times,
your view. Yeah. I just, it's
sure.
just not my
and a lot of people can turn around when you're talking about abortion and they put it in the religious area, quote unquote. But to me, it's a lot more than that. Because, number one, let's look at what Mr. Tiller does down there in Wichita as far as trimester abortion. me, I'm not a religious, but I do have a relationship with Jesus Christ. But you and myself, we would sit down, I would think, Jim, and if we start talking about trimester, partial birth abortions, I don't think that becomes a religious ground.
No, we're on the same page.
Okay.
I think third trimester abortions, I don't understand, and this is one of the faults, I think, with the pro-life movement. I'm not sure they've had their eyes opened as to the political realities, how the political process works. Years ago, the pro-lifers could have come up with a bill, I think, that everybody could have supported, rather than digging their heels in and saying pro-life, period, with no compromises. There could have been a compromise struck years ago in the state that would have outlawed third trimester abortions, would have outlawed partial birth abortions. But you've got the ardent pro-lifers, you've got the extremist on the pro-abortion side.
Right.
But there's so many people
in the
middle. Give
them 6 weeks and we'll kill them, then we'll decide whether we want to keep them or not. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, 90% of Kansans, I think, are in agreement. 90% plus of Kansans are in agreement. Third trimester, partial birth abortions are wrong, because then there is no doubt about when conception, when life begins.
Yes, exactly.
Because if that baby can live outside the womb, then you're killing a human being.
You
and I are in agreement.
Yeah, okay. Now, you said during your comments there, you said, well, if those that were pro-life would have become politically expedient, then
working a compromise to
compromise.
Taking baby steps, if you will, towards the fact.
Now, here's my question to you, going back to Senator Pat Roberts. Okay. Is he not taking, are you saying, you said it seems wrong to you that he is pro-life, that he takes a stand on Sebelius from that viewpoint, and yet you want somebody, you know, let's say a person.
No, Bob, where I'm going with this, I didn't state it very well.
Okay.
We could have limited abortions in Kansas.
Jim, pull your mic out a little.
Okay. And we chose not to limit abortions in Kansas.
Okay.
We could have eliminated third trimester and partial birth abortions. I think it would have been an easy compromise to strike. But Pat Roberts, I think where Pat becomes hypocritical on this issue, is the fact that if Sebelius, she's not being appointed Secretary of Treasury.
Right.
She's going to be in a position, she's going to define national health care. Now, if Kathleen Sebelius is an ardent enough supporter of third trimester abortions, partial birth abortions, that is going to be part of our national health insurance package that you and I are going to pay for.
No doubt.
You and I are going to pay for
third
trimester
abortions. We're paying for a lot of it
abortions. Yeah. But, you know, that will be part of the national debate. Will be third trimester abortions. We know where Kathleen Sebelius stands on third trimester abortions. For that reason, anybody that professes to be a strong pro-lifer, how in the world could they vote for Kathleen Sebelius?
Have you called Pat and asked him?
No. Senator Roberts and I used to be fairly close. We're not so close anymore. And that's because of my criticism of George W. Bush over the past 8 years. I've been unabashedly critical of George W. Bush. I think he almost destroyed the country.
Well,
Obama might finish us off.
Yeah.
But George W. Bush set the stage with his irresponsible government spending over an eight-year period, six of which Pat Roberts and the Republicans were in control.
Exactly.
It's inexcusable what happened to this country.
You know,
there is no excuse for what happened to this country over the past 8 years.
You know, the excuse is, last night I just happened to watch Fox Business Channel. They had Dave Ramsey on. I don't listen to Dave Ramsey an awful lot. But I got caught in his program, and there was such a message of hope that, I mean, just emanated from the guy. And hope in the economy, hope in the country that we can take care of ourselves. And it's recently, I mean, I just came away from that because I don't know about you, but I spend sometimes during the day going, where are my kids going? What's going to be for the grandchildren? Where's this country going? At 66 years old, I go, oh, my. Okay. And it's almost gets to close to fear that I have. And I have But I was just really amazed by the guy. And I'm not really one who sits down and listens to Dave Ramsey, just on the fact that I think he's got good advice, but financially, I look at things.
Good advice and strong convictions.
Exactly. And there's that convictions. And there's, are you going back to Senator Robertson and saying, you know, that? But I mean, I was just the message of hope that he brought last night.
Yeah. And again, I don't want to spend 20 minutes bashing Pat Roberts. He's done so much that's been.
Well, no, he'll never show up on your show.
He hasn't. And I haven't invited the senator in quite some time. But, you know, I will give a lot of credit to Pat Roberts, you know, on the illegal immigration topic, mm-hmm. because Pat Roberts, that's where, when he finally made the break.
Yeah.
Finally made the break and said, Mr. President, you've taken it too far this time. And Pat Roberts absolutely was on the right side of the illegal immigration debate, and still is.
Yeah.
And issue where Senator Roberts stood tall. You know, there's good and bad to be found in everybody else.
What do you think's going to happen to the GOP? I mean, there's nobody really stepping up to the plate that I know of, statewide.
I'm becoming so cynical, and that bothers me because, you know, 8 years ago when I was hosting this show, you know, I was that ray of hope, ray of sunshine, or I've been perceived, you know, that I've.
Well,
I don't know
if they've like to say you're a ray of sunshine. I've been here before.
But I'm no longer this ray of sunshine. You know, I've become very cynical. I am very angry. I don't like what's happened to this country over the past 8 years. And as far as that message of hope, you know, that Dave Ramsey was talking about last night, I'm just no longer there, I guess, to where I don't have that message of hope anymore. And that troubles me, you know, going on the air 5 days a week without that message of hope.
Having ran a talk show for a good number of years, it's a real... What do I want to say? It's really hard to keep yourself up all the time, especially in today's day and age. I can understand what you're going through.
We see too much, you know, sitting here.
Yeah.
As a talk show host, we see and hear too much.
Yeah.
And I suppose, or at some point in time, it really starts to wear on you.
Yeah.
And,
Well, you know, the concern going back to Dave Ramsey and not his hope message, but going back to the concerns that we have on the economy of what's going to happen. I mean, we're starting to see it, and you're going to be talking next hour about the bus mill hike. Everybody's going to be coming up, and they're going to want a mill hike because they've been living so long on the increased valuations, and so the tax revenue's gone up.
14% of the TMTA revenue stream. 14% comes from bus revenue. I mean, that's absolutely, totally ridiculous. If we're going to provide public transportation, those that are using public transportation, damn it, pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, I was amazed when I saw the breakdown as far as the revenue stream for a bus service. 48% federal government grants. You know, it's your and my tax dollars at work coming out of Washington to subsidize our bus service. 37% comes from you and I in the form of property taxes. And it gets down to a meager, measly 14% of the revenue produced by the TMTA is from bus fares. That's ridiculous. If somebody needs to take the bus, pay for it.
I think
we need to provide bus transportation for low-income workers.
That's right.
But they need to share the cost.
Right. Well, and here's the thing, Jim. I love CJ Online, being able to go on to CJ Online and read the blogs and have. But there were so many good ideas on that story of raising the mill rate for the last few days. The people had some real tangible ideas that I want the city council and the bus, Greece and Nesbitt, or the one. Want them to take
Chandler knows with Tucker.
Want them to take a look at that, because there were some people who really did some looking. I mean, you got your normal, you know, on nothing. Do we need bus service? Yes. Okay. Do we need to subsidize it at, if you say 14%, then it's 86% in the subsidy. What are other cities doing? And why are we paying so much for big buses when maybe we're better off during portions of those diet to run
a minivan around.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, because that bus is getting 5 miles to the gallon. That bus cost $350,000. It's getting 5 miles to the gallon, and Sunday nights it's going to be 5% full. It makes no sense.
That.
Yeah, if that, it makes no sense whatsoever. But, you know, Bob, you just mentioned something, and it troubles me again, getting into my cynicism and what have you, somewhat negative feelings. We have so many well-intentioned local members, members of our local government, county government, the whole nine yards. But when something like this comes up, the first question I ask, okay, let's compare Topeka to other communities of like size. What are they doing? What's their mill levy? What are they charging in terms of bus fares? 9 times out of 10, I get this deer in the headlights look. Like, what are you talking about? We haven't compared Topeka to other communities. And at the very least, I think that gives us a good starting point.
Exactly.
If we know what other towns of 150,000 in population are doing, that gives us a starting point to where we can then make the determination, are we somewhat on the right path? Are we way out there in left field as far as government spending? Are we way out there in right field as far as not providing enough the needed services?
Well, you bring a good point. In the point that I found, I didn't move to town until after the council manager form of government and that ordinance was passed. But then seeing all the problems they had there with that, to me, there's a place in Tallahassee, Florida. Used to know the gentleman that ran it years ago when he first started, called Municipal Code. Municipal Code is the place where they were proofreading all of these different documents. And I said, to me, a thought was, wait, before you go out and do this, you go and you say, well, here's a city of different size, here's another one different size, let's look. We go to Municipal Code, even if we have to pay, to see how they wrote theirs, and then talk to them and see, what were the good points? What would you change and all of that
Bingo.
Stuff? Okay.
We don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time we want to go around the block. And what got me was that I got on the city's webpage, and I start looking at their ordinances, and guess where they come from? Municipal Code. Well, they already are subscribing to Municipal Code, and Municipal Code's taking care of their stuff out of Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been just a phone call to say, hey, what are some other cities that, you know, but when I talked to my council person and talked to some of the others, why didn't they do that? It was like you said, oh, I mean, why do you have to reinvent the wheel every time you want to go over?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's determine what other communities are doing. What they're doing might be good, bad, or indifferent, but it gives you that starting point.
Exactly.
That point of reference.
Yeah. And then you can go back and you can pick from this and this, and you say, well, I don't like any of these. In this particular area, I think we need to go this, and then you discuss it.
Absolutely.
And from there, that doesn't show.
Well, there's my 8 o'clock guest.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I'm going to be out of here then just shortly, and I get to eat my croissant.
Bob Snyder, always good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Okay.
God bless.
All right, Gerald Block just walked in, and he is going to be our 8:30 guest. We are at the Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Urish. Folks, come out and see us. We're going to be here until 11 o'clock today. Dave Jackson is coming in at 10 o'clock with an hour of gardening tips. Folks, you don't want to miss that. 9 o'clock, we've got Denise Eck, TV 49 News Director's coming in. John Arnold, he's going to be here. It's going to be a big day here at the Roundabout Cafe. And Gerald Block, you look very nice today, Gerald. Very nice, huh? Just out of the barber's chair. I'll tell you, Ralph Anderson does a fine job, doesn't he? SurePoint hairstyling, it doesn't get any better. Hey, let's take a break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Jim Cates at CG Online.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Placing 18th in the last Summer Olympics didn't earn many headlines for the Netherlands, and we rarely talk about who is 18th in line to succeed the president. When it comes to the health and well-being of Kansas children, 18th place isn't worth writing home about. The 2008 Kids Count Report, a nationwide study of the well-being of children, ranks Kansas at 18th. Though we continue to take steps that will improve the lives of Kansas children, we can do more. Find out what it takes to become the best state in the nation to raise a child. Visit Kansas Action for Children, KAC.org.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100. Or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
Christmas lights and headlights, too late to know the difference. And train me slash like me today.
Unlike six of my high school friends who died in a truck train crash, you have your whole life in front of you. So don't waste it by walking on or near railroad tracks. This is singer Gina Taylor for Operation Lifesaver, reminding you to stay off the tracks and stay alive. For more information, log on to OLI.org.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJ Online, your source for interviews, community commentary, and news, live and online. Phone lines are now open at 295-1193 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
And we're back at the Roundabout Cafe. Edgar Hearing Aid Service, folks. For those of you that have suffered that permanent hearing loss and have yet to do anything about it, you can give Edgar Hearing Aid Service a call at 266-2000. Schedule your free hearing exam, folks. Get it taken care of. It's going to improve the quality of your life and everybody that comes in contact with you. 3641 Blast, they're located just right east of 37th and Burlingame. Edgar Hearing Aid Service, they have been voted number one in Northeast Kansas in the Best of Topeka contest, and these are your votes, folks, that put Edgar Hearing Aid Service over the top as far as being the true consummate professionals. 266-2000. Good morning, Gerald Block.
How you doing, Jim?
I am doing well. My wife has been spending more time with you this week than she has me. She unfortunately serves on the Sherwood Lake Club Board of Directors, and you've had three meetings this week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
We getting over yet, Jim.
Yeah, the phone rang about 6:30 last night, and Nancy said, if it's Gerald or Dwayne or anybody calling that with the Sherwood Lake Club Board, tell them I'm not home. I'm not going to go to another meeting tonight.
Well, I had to go to a meeting.
You have been keeping her a little bit busy.
I had to go to a meeting yesterday your wife was supposed to go to that she set up, and I didn't. I had to go to it. For
county commission meeting. And I'll tell you, you know, the county commissioners, I'll give them a pat on the back. They've done a pretty good job as far as development in the Sherwood area. You know, the developers, if you're building a home, you're required to keep the silt out of Lake Sherwood or any body of water, for that matter.
That's correct.
There are measures. that you can implement that keeps, you know, the loose dirt from flowing into a body of water?
Yes.
Several of our home builders in the Sherwood community just, they've been a little negligent, shall we say.
Well, yes. I mean, the county commission at least does something about soil runoff. Go to the city of Topeka. They do nothing. Zero. Nothing. They just let the soil run. You go into developments within the city. They don't put anything up. So when a developer comes out of the county, they don't think they have to do anything either.
Mm-hmm.
But the county does have laws and does do some enforcement on soil runoff.
You bet. And Rich Eckert, Shawnee County Councilor, or three county commissioners, in this respect, they've done a good job.
Yes.
Yeah. They are attempting to enforce soil runoff preventive measures. So.
Correct.
But there's another issue at Lake Sherwood, Gerald, the reason I wanted to have you on the show. And you currently are serving as the president of the Sherwood Lake Club. You've been president now for, what, 5 years?
I can't remember how long. Too long, probably.
You've been around a while. We've got a situation that we apparently have somewhat of an antiquated sewage system in place at Lake Sherwood. What we've got has been there for 20, 30 years, and it's still operational. It still functions, but it's getting old. And a lot of new development at Sherwood to our current system in a short period of time is going to be on overload.
Yes.
Where our current system just isn't going to be able to handle the increased sewage as a result of new developments in and around the Sherwood area.
Well, that plus the pump stations that pump sewage out of the Sherwood area are 20, 30 years old, and those pump stations need to be replaced. And that's what the heart of this project is about, is replacing three pump stations, two of which are on the north side of the lake where the major problem is. The south side of the lake hasn't experienced near the problems that the north side of the lake has, and it's really not necessary that they immediately replace the one pump station on the south side of the lake. They threw that into the mix so that they could do this cross connection underneath the lake.
Now, they're talking about running sewage pipes under Lake Sherwood. Why should somebody listening to this show that lives at 10th and Oakley give a rat's foo-foo whether there's a sewage line going over Lake Sherwood, under Lake Sherwood, or around Lake Sherwood?
Because if that sewer line leaks, the Lake Sherwood is on the Shunganunga Creek, and all that sewage will run right through the heart of Topeka. And when they put it under the lake like that, they can't determine immediately that it's leaking. The other issue would be that it is possible that doing the horizontal drilling that they're going to do could crack the rock formation underneath the lake and drain the lake, and they potentially could lose the ability for flood control that Lake Sherwood provides also.
So if Lake Sherwood, the seal of Lake Sherwood is like puncturing a hole in a swimming pool. If you puncture a hole, the swimming pool is going to drain.
Jim,
that could possibly happen to Lake Sherwood as well.
Yes.
If Lake Sherwood drains, where does the water go? Whose basement is this water going to end up in?
Don't know that for sure. It would go underneath the rock formation, but it's going to come out somewhere.
Yeah, and it's going to come out downhill.
Yes.
Somewhere. That would be the city of Topeka, possibly.
Well, we want to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, bingo. Now, the county is proposing, you know, running the sewage line underneath the lake.
Yes.
This firm that's doing it, how many years of experience do they have as far as running sewage pipes underneath bodies of water?
That'd be zero. None.
That would be zero.
Yes. We had a meeting Tuesday night. We had about 70 Lake Club members come to the meeting, spoke to the engineers. A number of questions were asked. Questions like, there's springs in the bottom of the lake. How does that affect if that sewer line would leak? If there's springs and water comes up in the bottom of the lake, why wouldn't the sewer water come up from the underneath into the lake? They had no answers to that type of stuff because, you know, they just don't have experience in this type of thing. But that they are proposing 5 years from now to build a sewer line west of Indian Hills, right west of the lake, for future expansions of the south and west of the lake. If they're going to build that 5 years from now, we say, why not build it now and don't run sewage underneath the lake? Why take that environmental risk? There has not been an environmental impact study done on running this sewage line underneath the lake at this point.
Okay. Now, as a lake club, as a lake member, as a Lake Sherwood resident, if the county says, you know, if anything goes wrong, we're going to pay for the damages, we're going to repair your lake.
That's not what they said. They said if anything goes wrong, you have to fix your own lake.
So if something goes wrong,
if it leaks,
nobody's going to be held accountable?
That's
Am
right.
I hearing you correctly?
That's correct. It's our responsibility to fix it.
Well, that doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. You know, one of the things that we've inquired about is if the engineering firm or the county was going to put up a huge bond so that if that happened, there would be money to repair it. And obviously they don't want to spend the money doing that, and the engineering firm obviously is not going to do that. They couldn't afford to do that.
Why would our county engineer be pushing for this, you know, for this pipe to go under a lake if they've contracted a firm that's never done this before? I mean, we're talking about somebody that's never run a sewage line underneath a body of water.
Underneath a lake.
Underneath a lake. Okay, they've never run a sewage line underneath a lake.
That's correct.
And there is an alternative to where they can run, you know, this piping around the lake to where they're going to end up doing that anyway because of future development on the southwest side of the lake.
Well,
where's
the issue comes down to other engineering companies have done things running sewer lines underneath rivers and lakes and stuff, but this particular engineering firm has not done that. What they'll do is they'll take bids for a company to do this work. The low bidder will do this work. That's like, you know, if I'm going to go jump out of a parachute, out of an airplane, the parachute like you did a few years ago, would I want the low bidder to bid my to do my parachute, or would I want a good parachute? I think I'd want the good one.
Yeah, bingo, bingo. Well, I don't understand why, if something goes wrong, no one is held accountable.
Well, we could potentially sue, but why should we have any responsibility for fixing that damage? You know, it ought to be automatic that they do it, you know, that somebody take care of it. I mean, they'll repair their sewer line, but they, you know, if sewage kills the lake, kills all the vegetation growing in the bottom of the lake, all the fish in it, it won't kill everything because there's bad organisms in the lake too. It won't kill them. It'll take over 20 years to rebuild the lake. In the interim, you're going to have mud flowing down the Shunganunga,
which is not good for anybody living in the city of Topeka.
No, that's correct.
Okay, you know, I attended one of the meetings this week. Gerald Block and I asked a question, and I'm really confused about this because we're talking about 4,000 homes basically in the Sherwood area that are going to be impacted by whatever's done. The sewage lines out there.
I assume that's accurate, 4,000.
Okay. Well, I think that was the figure I heard the other night.
Yeah, and I think roughly 2,000 of those homes are in the immediate area of the lake.
Yeah, and 4,000 homes overall. And the project and the cost on this thing is going to run $3.5 million. Now, there's $1 million of free money coming in from the federal government, apparently, as part of the stimulus package, whatever, which leaves $2.5 million to pay off. I asked the question, I said, what's going to happen to our sewer rates, you know, if, in fact, this is approved, $3.5 million project? The answer I was given, well, it shouldn't impact your rates at all. Now, wait a minute. Getting into government accounting, I suppose, how can we be obligated to pay off a $3.5 million debt?
Well,
and it's not going to impact my sewage rate?
They're looking at borrowing $2.5 million from the federal government through the Kansas Department of Health and Environment.
Right.
And hopefully the
Does it, somebody have
this
to pay
would,
that?
These would be long-term loans,
okay.
low-interest loans.
All right.
And so if those are long-term loans, the money that comes into the Sherwood Improvement area on this sewer system, the money that we already pay would take care of those, because that's how they've come up with this. They actually have an extra $1 million in that fund now for future improvements to it. That's where the million came from.
Okay. All right. Okay. But basically, the system we have in place, I mean, we've got a couple of pump stations that are getting old and eventually will need to be replaced, even though they're working today. Basically, all of this is about future development in the Sherwood area.
The pump stations need to be replaced. They've needed to be replaced for 10 years now.
Okay, okay.
So they need to do those, and they could just do that part of the project, which probably $1 million would handle.
Okay, all right. But let's say we go the full bore on this thing, $3.5 million, okay, because that is basically taking care of future development needs in the Sherwood area. Why wouldn't the future developers pick up the cost on this? I've got all the neighbors I need. Why do I need to pay for future development?
That'd be one neighbor, Jim.
But we that live in Sherwood now, this $3.5 million, this basically is for future development. Why wouldn't we
well,
be
part
assessing
of it is to repair
the home builders, whoever's developing Sherwood from this point on, south and west, why wouldn't they be picking up the tab for this?
Well,
if we've got a system that's pretty much adequate, that's adequately meeting our needs.
They would become part of the Sherwood wastewater unit when they develop. They do have to pay a connection fee, but and it won't be just the 2,000 homes immediately around Lake Sherwood to pay for the cost of $3.5 million. It's the entire unit. The all 4,000 homes that pay for this cost. All we're saying is rather than doing this less or more temporary connection underneath the lake, let's go ahead and build the line west to Indian Hills that they're going to do 5 years from now. And why waste the money going underneath the lake? It's a waste of money. It's poor planning.
Yeah, bingo. I would agree with that. But, you know, as far as the sewage line you're talking about running up and down Indian Hills Road.
Yes.
And the reason that is going to be constructed is for future development.
Yes.
Why wouldn't our county commissioners consider upping the connection fee? Because currently it's, what, $2,000 a home?
I don't know what it is.
I think $2,000, I believe, is what somebody said. I could be wrong on that. But why not up that connection fee from $2,000 to $4,000?
Well,
why should we be paying for a connection fee for somebody building a home? You know, at the far southwestern reaches of Lake Sherwood. I don't understand why this is being thrown on us.
Well, it's thrown on everybody in the Sherwood wastewater deal, but I hate to see them waste. I don't know the exact cost of putting that line under the lake, but it's probably a third of this project, maybe, you know, it's several hundred thousand dollars, close to $1 million, to do that boring. I think $700,000 or something like that. They why waste that money? Just go ahead and build the line west of the lake. It's cheaper to build the line west of the lake. They told us the other night at this meeting it costs four times as much to build a line underneath the lake as it does to go where you can just dig like they could west of Indian Hills and that pasture land out there.
So it would make much more sense to go out in the pasture land and build the sewer line.
Absolutely.
And again, I would think, you know, if I was a county commissioner, one of the concerns I would have, that A, if something goes wrong, if that lake drains, A, you know, if they puncture the lake and now we've got a mud hole out there rather than a lake, that means property values are going to decline in the Sherwood area, which means there's going to be a tremendous loss of revenue for Shawnee County.
Yeah, 2,000 homes becoming, you know, worth 10% of what they are now.
Yeah.
That they're collecting tax on.
Yeah.
You know, there's a good many homes out in that area where people are paying $3,000-$4,000 a year and up in taxes.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are paying close to $10,000 a year in taxes out there. And They won't have that revenue anymore.
Yeah, and the county would have to know that if that lake drains, if something goes wrong, especially with the opposition of the Sherwood residents to this project in the first place, there is going to be litigation involved.
Certainly.
Why would our county commissioners even entertain the idea if virtually nobody in the Sherwood community is for this?
Well, if they try to proceed with this plan, there will be litigation involved. I mean, one thing you have to remember, they're going to get that loan from KDAG. Even the staff of KDAG approves this loan. The secretary of KDAG has to approve this loan. The staff of KDAG approved the power plant out in western Kansas. The secretary of KDAG killed that power plant, and we can go to the secretary and the governor and try to get this killed even if the county commissioners don't kill it. And I think we'd have a very good chance of doing that because it makes no sense.
Okay. Now, there's a public meeting.
Monday night.
Monday night.
7 o'clock at the Indian Hills Elementary School. And everybody that's interested, the 4,000 people in this area, ought to show up at this meeting, whether you're pro or con on this issue. The other night we had 70 people there. We had no idea whether they'd be for or against this. It turned out that 70 people were against this project.
Yeah, that was the meeting I attended. I didn't hear anybody that was in favor of this.
No.
Huh, okay. And that's Monday night. Now, our county commissioners are going to take official action when? Do we know the timeline on one or three county commissioners are going to be meeting on this?
No. They could hold a meeting immediately following the hearing. They could call a county commission meeting and vote on this right then, or they could do it later on. Is it likely they'll do it Monday night? I don't know. And that's why people need to be there, because if it goes, they decide to vote on this then, you need to be there so you can tell the commissioners what you think ought to be done.
Yeah. Yeah. Bingo. But at the meeting that I attended last week, the question was asked about Plan B, you know, comparing cost of Plan B, which is what you've been talking about, running the sewer line up and down Indian Hills Road, as opposed to going under the lake. They didn't have any cost figures on that. Are they going to be able to have those figures in time for Monday night's meeting?
Not accurate figures. That'd be impossible to do that in that time. It's taken 6 months to get this done.
I would think our county commissioners would want to know what Plan B is going to cost before they would take official action.
Well, one would think that that would be the case, but there's no guarantee.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, again, I would urge everybody that is involved in the Sherwood wastewater area and that live in the Lake Sherwood area to show up for this meeting Monday night. You've got to let people know.
Yeah, bingo. Right now, you know, over the past few months, I think we've seen somewhat of a change of attitude of our county commissioners, and I hope that continues. Enough said, I suppose, but, you know, in terms of good public policy, it just doesn't make sense because there's so many downsides, potential downsides, to running the sewage under Lake Sherwood. And I don't see the upside other than what they're telling us, and they don't have any figures to back this up. They're saying that it's going to cost less money running that sewage line under Lake Sherwood as opposed to around it. But again,
yeah.
Gerald, as you and I both know, we were at that meeting the other night where the engineer, Tom
Block,
said, we don't know what Plan B is going to cost. So we don't know. It could be actually cheaper to run, you know, this new sewage line up and down Indian Hills Road.
Well,
and I was surprised, frankly, that they didn't have cost comparisons to show us.
One of the things that was said at the commission meeting yesterday was that it would cost, and in the paper today, it costs a lot more to buy all that right-of-way west. They only put $50,000 in their budget to buy all the right-of-way around Lake Sherwood to redo all these sewer lines. I can guarantee you it's going to cost far more than that.
It's going to be interesting. So Monday night, show up at Indian Hills.
7 o'clock. If you can't make that meeting, call your county commissioner. You've got three county commissioners. You need to call all three of them and voice your opinion.
Yeah. Hope that works. You've done a lot of work on this. We will see you tomorrow morning.
Yes.
And then we've got cleanup of Lake Sherwood and the surrounding area.
Yes. And, it's cleanup day tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock.
Yes, indeed. So, folks, if you're in the Lake Sherwood community, show up at the Lake Sherwood Clubhouse.
Yep.
Tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, and work 2-3 hours max.
Yep.
11 o'clock, it's all going to be done. And it's just spiffing up our community.
Yep.
So, I'll see you tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Gerald Block.
Thank you.
Gerald is the president of the Sherwood Lake Club and has done a good job. And this is an issue, folks, truly, that this potentially could impact you, regardless of where you live in Shawnee County, because if things go wrong, if things go south on this project, ultimately, you know, the cost is going to be borne and shared by everybody in Shawnee County. So, it's just, and again, I've attended one meeting. I'm certainly not an expert on this topic whatsoever, but the one meeting I attended, it just doesn't appear to make a lot of sense to me, you know, running this sewage line under Lake Sherwood, because, my gosh, there's just so many things that can go wrong. And as Gerald Block pointed out, you know, we could be saving a buck or two, possibly, but again, we don't know that for sure, because they didn't have any cost comparisons to show us the other night at the meeting what Plan B would cost if, in fact, a Plan B was adopted. So the whole thing's a little bit on the nutty side. Okay, but our county commissioners hopefully will make the right decision whenever they choose to officially take this up. Don't forget tomorrow morning, I'm going to start off my day at the Combat Air Museum, 7 o'clock. It's the annual pancake feed. A lot of media personalities, a lot of our elected officials are going to be out flipping pancakes between 7 and noon tomorrow at the Combat Air Museum. It's $5, all you can eat. And folks, this is the major fundraiser for the Combat Air Museum, so if you haven't been out to the Combat Air Museum, it's in the hangar at the far south end of Forbes Field. And I hope to see a lot of you out tomorrow. That is the annual Celebrity Pancake Feed. Okay, Trish Johnston in the news. And following Trish, we've got John Arnold. And John, by the way, is going to be a weekly guest on our media roundtable. I know so many of you have commented on John, and I asked John last night whether he would like to come in each and every Friday to be a part of our media roundtable, and he said he would. So we also have Denise Eck coming in. Denise Eck, she is the news director for TV 49. So that's all coming up. And at 10 o'clock, Dave Jackson's coming on with an hour of gardening tips. And it's all happening here at the Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Yerish. Stay tuned, folks. More to come.
Good morning. Here's just a look of news you can read in more detail in the Topeka Capital Journal and on CJ Online. Flags across the state will be flown at half staff from sunup to sundown Saturday in honor of fallen soldier Private Richard A. Dewater, Governor Kathleen Sebelia said Thursday. Department of Defense officials said Dewater, 21, of Topeka, was on a dismounted U.S. Army patrol as part of Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan when he was fatally wounded by an IED on April 15th. His funeral is planned for Saturday morning at Roseburg National Cemetery in Oregon. Dewater called Brands Pass, Oregon, his home. Governor Kathleen Sebelius' decision to veto Thursday a bill amending Kansas law on late-term abortions occurred at a critical juncture in her bid to become a cabinet secretary in the administration of President Barack Obama. Sebelius, who supports abortion rights but says she personally opposes the method of birth control, said the vetoed legislation likely would have been ruled unconstitutional by federal courts. Veto of abortion measures triggered ridicule and praise from people on opposite ends of the political spectrum. A Topeka woman who died Wednesday night in a motorcycle accident near Lake Shawnee was a registered nurse and the mother of a high school student. Leanna J. Rain, 45, was a passenger on a motorcycle involved in a three-vehicle accident shortly before 8 p.m. at Southeast 45th and West Edge Road. She was transported to a Topeka hospital with serious injuries and later pronounced dead. Shawnee County Sheriff officers said Rain was unresponsive at the scene. Rain is survived by Kyle Rain, her 15-year-old son. Sheriff officer said Mark Ulrich, 50, was driving the motorcycle when it and a 2004 Ford F-150 pickup truck collided at Southeast 45th and West Edge. The motorcycle then struck a 2002 Ford Taurus. Ulrich was transported to Stormontville Regional Health Center with serious injuries. He later was flown to the University of Kansas Medical Center in Kansas City, Kansas for surgery. Stay tuned. Jim Cates at CJ Online will return.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection.
Go.
Topeka Collegiate, Topeka's only independent school, treats every child as gifted. Each student is encouraged to excel in a caring, small class learning environment guided by humanitarian principles. At Topeka Collegiate, children fall in love with learning. Enrollment is limited. Call 228-0490 or visit our website at topekacollegiate.org. Topeka Collegiate School. Educating children for life.
Excuse me, why are you saving those old eyeglasses? You know the ones, stuck away in the desk drawer, haven't been worn in years. Yeah, those. You should donate them to your local Lions Club. Lions Clubs have been collecting used eyeglasses for years. They'll take your old eyeglasses and recycle them for someone in need of proper eyewear. Call your local Lions Club for information on where you can donate your old eyeglasses. Lions Clubs International. We serve.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org. It's the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJ Online, your source for interviews, community commentary, and news, live and online. Phone lines are now open at 295-1193 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay. We are back at the Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Yours. We're going to be here again, folks, until 11 o'clock today because we have Dave Jackson with Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center coming in at 10, an hour of gardening tips. Yep, it's all coming up. Hey, this hour is also brought to you by Coop the Plumber, Cooper Plumbing, Heating and Air Conditioning, 267-4100 for all of your heating, plumbing, and air conditioning needs, soon to be air conditioning needs. It's a little early, I suppose, to flip on the air conditioner.
Last night I thought it was a little sticky, so it's coming.
It's coming.
Yeah, but you just resist at this time of the year. You want to let a little bit of springtime when there's just natural air in the house, don't you?
And
I want to, as long as I can.
John.
And the bills are better.
Yeah, well, that's
true.
I could go all summer without that air conditioner on. I love hot weather. It doesn't bother me a bit. So, you know, that's something I could do without. They could take the central air unit out of the house. I'd never miss it. Well, you're a man of extremes. So that that fits.
Well, I'm foibled.
There you go.
Huh?
You're foibled.
I'm foibled. John Arnold, with the, representing the Metro News, is with us along with Denise Eck, representing TV 49. Good to have you both.
Good morning.
With us.
Thank you.
And we're going to be talking about the top stories of the week. Denise, what is the top story of the week, in your opinion?
Well, it sort of bubbled up suddenly later this week, in fact, yesterday afternoon, in fact, but I think it might be the sudden resistance to Governor Sebelius as HHS Secretary, the chairman of the RNC coming out saying, hold on, let's at least ask her a little more about abortion before we move forward. And, you know, Brownback and Roberts, who are Republicans, have given their blessing to it, and the Senate committee given its blessing to it. But we thought this was going to be a done deal. I thought by Friday morning we'd have a new governor in Kansas, and that sure isn't the case.
Doesn't look like that's going to happen for a while.
Well, but the interesting thing is some of the national news media folks are talking about the fact that the Republicans are really behind it. This was the Republican Chairman Steele who came out opposed to Sebelius. But they're saying that, hey, the Republicans are behind on the whole gay issue and the abortion issue, and it's not working anymore because the far right folks that the Republicans have been courting have given up on those issues. They're not fussing about those issues anymore, particularly after Iowa passed the right to gay marriage. That means that goes along with others that are not just East Coast, West Coast. And I think the Republicans are saying, whoops, I think we're missing the boat. And but, so they're going to change the boat.
But John Arnold and Nisak, is this about abortion? Or is this debate about third trimester abortions? Big difference. Again, because, you know, if Kathleen Sebelius is ultimately appointed, she is going to, in part, define what our future national health insurance coverage is going to be all about.
Sure.
Are we going to cover third trimester abortions? You know, and again, we talked about this during the 8 o'clock hour. Abortion is not one of my big issues, frankly. But I'm certainly opposed to third trimester abortions. If that baby can live outside the womb, now we're talking about a living human being. You know, we can all debate when conception, when life begins, and the whole nine yards. But I think everybody, virtually everyone, is in agreement that if that baby can live outside the womb, I think your pro-life, your pro-choice, your pro-abortionist all would agree. Now we're talking about a living human being.
Yeah.
And I think that's where this is headed, isn't it? You really think this is a debate where, you know, the extreme far right, as you referenced them, is going to drive this debate? Or is this going to be more of a centrist debate dealing with the third trimester abortion issue?
That's a very good point, Jim. I think a large part of it is, some of it is the far right debate. Some of it is the technological argument about the third trimester. I'm kind of supportive of a woman's right to choose, but I also had two premature sons. One was 2 months early, born at 2 pounds, 11 ounces, and dropped to 2, and spent 55 days in an incubator, and we didn't know if he was going to survive, because you don't know at that time whether the lungs can carry. And he's just fine. He grew up just fine, a little smaller than normal, but just fine, very bright. The other one was 3'10". And he didn't lose much weight, but he grew up nicely. He had cerebral palsy, but and that, you know, continues, but he had a bunch of surgeries and things, and he's just fine. And kid is very bright. Anyway, doing just fine. But it would have been easy, had you known, you know, do the sonograms and stuff like that, to suggest that these kids were going to be a problem or something.
Weren't going to make it.
Yeah, and bad idea to abort, you know, a couple of guys. Anyway, I that. So I'm a little bit torn on the issue.
And this is going to sound like it is just out of left field, but if we take the issue out of it and look at the politics of it, I thought it was kind of interesting that this was sort of fronted by Michael Steele, who you don't hear much about until you think back to that controversy with Rush Limbaugh, that people were saying that Michael Steele wasn't a vocal enough or out front enough Republican, and I wonder if he has found his issue or his voice in Kathleen Sebelius, if she is the fall guy for, you know, him suddenly making a stand and saying, heck yeah, I am a strong Republican voice, and we're going to lead the charge on this one. You know, it wasn't an elected lawmaker. It was this spokesperson.
And Denise Eck, would you agree, and John Arnold, that now we've got Senator Pat Roberts and Senator Brownback, they're in the crosshairs on this one now. Senator Roberts is getting rather, he's getting up in years. I don't think anybody anticipates Senator Roberts running for re-election, having one more go at this. If, in fact, he does, I think he is going to have some stiff resistance in the Republican Party, because Senator Roberts was on the committee that moved Sebelius' nomination forward.
Sure.
And Senator Roberts certainly was aware of Governor Sebelius' position on third trimester abortion, since we have one of the three third trimester doctors in Wichita, one of her big contributors, I think possibly her biggest. Roberts was aware of all this and didn't bring it up in the committee hearings. Now, this thing's out of committee. Now it's on the full Senate floor. And Senator Pat Roberts has to share in the blame we're allowing this to get as far as it has, if, in fact, this is an issue of concern, getting into the third trimester abortion issue. Now, you know, early on, Senator Brownback was catching a lot of heat because Senator Brownback, whether we agree with the senator or not on the life issues,
I've got a tremendous amount of respect personally for Senator Brownback standing up for his convictions. And I think most would agree,
sure,
whether we agree with the senator or not. He is a man, he's a principled individual. But now I think Senator Roberts maybe is on the back burner, Senator Brownback's on the back burner. Now Senator Roberts is getting a lot of attention on this. And
well, Jim, the thing about Roberts is I was kind of surprised that he won so handily, because he chaired that Intelligence Committee for all those years, and they didn't do a thing in terms of looking into the Iraq war issue, the CIA intelligence issues, and all of that. And he's kind of Teflon a little bit. I mean, nobody fussed about that.
John, I think there's a good explanation for that, though.
Do you?
When Jim Slattery announced that he was running against Pat Roberts, Jim Slattery, 24 hours after the announcement, was within 9 points of Senator Roberts. 9 points. And that's when Senator Roberts ran a horrible ad. To follow this up, Senator Roberts was painting Jim Slattery as this 30-year Washington insider.
Right, right.
How many years has Roberts been there? You know, and Roberts didn't look very good.
Yeah.
You know, trying to portray Slattery as the insider when Roberts has been there equally as long, if not longer. But I think the turning point in that campaign happened very early in the process when Senator Roberts started running the ads that out of 435 members of Congress, Jim Slattery ranked 434th on attendance. The only reason he wasn't at the bottom of the heap because number 435 died. You know, and it was such an effective ad. Overnight, the polling took Jim Slattery down to where he was now, down 25 points in the polls. And any time that Slattery started to climb in the polls, they'd resurrect this ad, which was so effective. It was the most effective ad in 2008 in any campaign in Kansas, in my opinion, because it just destroyed Jim Slattery right out of the chute. He wasn't going anywhere. Agreed?
I don't remember seeing that ad once or twice, but apparently it did happen.
Being the news director of TV 49, yes. Certainly a lot more.
You
certainly saw.
And we were grateful for all that advertising revenue, certainly. So I do remember that one pretty well. When you get back to the abortion issue, in the overall scheme of health care, what kind of frustrates me about what a prominent topic it is, and this is just my personal opinion, when you look at all the health care problems we have in this country, all the people who need coverage, I think realistically when you look at the number of late-term abortions, I think that falls pretty low on the list. And I think with the financial situation this country is in and the moral implications that go along with late-term abortions, I don't think it's practical to expect that the government is going to pay for a third trimester abortion. I just don't think we're ever going to get there. I just think that in people's hearts and minds and just the limited supply of money and all the other health care issues we've got to take care of. So it's sort of like the Roberts ad, you know, it's a zinger. It gets people talking and it gets people fired up. But in the most practical sense, I think there are bigger health care things to take care of, and I think that's why she was nominated. They think she can get it done. And I think that's why Roberts and Brownback supported her, because they think she can get it done. But this is just such an ugly issue and such a passionate one. But in this country, I just cannot imagine.
And Denise, I think there's going to be another shoe that's going to drop on this as well, because Governor Sebelius initially indicated that Dr. Teller had contributed roughly $12,000 to Governor Sebelius over the past few years. Well, now Governor Sebelius is saying, well, there was a little miscalculation here. It actually was $24,000 higher. But what hasn't come out yet is Dr. Teller's PACs that he formed. You know, when Governor Sebelius ran the first time and ran for re-election, now we're up to close to $500,000 that George Tiller has dumped into the election and re-election campaign bids for Governor Sebelius. Now, up till now, we've been talking $30,000, $35,000, $36,000, not much. Once this $500,000 other shoe drops, and I assume at some point in time it's going to, then all hell's going to break loose, potentially, I think. You know, we might see Governor Sebelius's she might finish her term in Kansas.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, John Arnold, is she going to be confirmed? What would you give it on a scale of 1 to 10?
An 8. She came out of the committee with, 16 to 8 votes, I think, something like that. Very strong, and I think Denise is right that
when you do the health care issue in this country, you're going to put the abortion, third-term abortions, a bit on the back burner, so you get the other things kind of dealt with. And that may be an answer that she comes up with, that sells.
And I'll say a 7. You know, I think I would have said a 9 three or four days ago. But I think, you know, a 7 and maybe an ugly 7, that it'll happen, but it won't be as smooth sailing as we thought it would be.
Yeah. We're not going to see Governor Mark Parkinson during the veto session, are we?
Oh.
I think you'll still be Lieutenant Governor.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you're right.
You'll still be Lieutenant Governor Parkinson.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it was an interesting veto. You know, on the heels of all of this, now that's breaking in Washington, she vetoed an abortion bill in Kansas, which lends even more attention to the abortion issue. And Obama, again, we know where President Obama stands on the abortion issue. I mean, he certainly is unabashedly pro-choice. Has made no bones about that. But again, you know, abortion, third trimester, again, two issues. Bessie. Bob Dole's willing all this. Why in the world is Bob Dole?
Wasn't that a surprise to see him in a couple of those?
Yes.
When he was, you know, introduced by the president. He was there, and then again at the committee hearings. That famous Kansas face, and another Republican.
And a Republican.
He obviously
a pro-life Republican. Standing up again for Kathleen Sebelius, somebody that's going to define national health insurance. I thought it was rather bizarre.
He still obviously has some juice in Washington with the Congress, or they wouldn't have trotted him out. Yeah, so that's interesting.
But yeah, I mean, they obviously trotted him out for the very reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, but why would he do it?
Has some respect.
Why would he put himself in that position again, being known for years as a pro-life senator?
I think all three of them, Roberts and Brownback and Dole, are probably saying Kansas first. Before issues, before Republican Party, and that's kind of good, you know. And so if we get Sebelius in there as a cabinet secretary, that's good for Kansas.
The only problem I have with that, and I've heard that argument, John, you're not the first one to express those sentiments.
Darn.
And that troubles me, you know, if these three individuals think like that. The reason being, Kathleen Sebelius, if she's not doing a good job, she's only hurting 2.5 million people.
In Kansas, I see.
In Kansas.
Yeah.
If she's not doing a good job, why would we want to elevate her now to where she's going to adversely impact 350 million people? That's bad public policy. If we don't think she's done a good job here, why would we want to kick her?
Yeah.
Move her up the ladder, up the food chain. For now, she's going to adversely have an impact on the United States population as opposed to a small state's population. That's bad public policy.
Yeah, but I think she's very competent and very bright, and she'll do a very good job as HHS. If anybody can. I mean, it's the largest bureaucracy in Washington.
And I think her insurance background.
Insurance background's a big deal.
They make such a big fuss about how well she works crossing the aisle, how she can win in a red state. But I think it's the insurance stuff, cutting through that red tape and really understanding what's at stake. And, you know, the insurance companies employ a lot of people and, you know, more people certainly need to be covered, but, you know, they're not the enemy in every situation.
Yep. She's also very rational. She's not a shouter. She's not one of the haranguers from either the left or right side that we see so many of on cable TV, particularly. But she's a very rational, calm, working with people kind of person, and has had some significant success, as he said, across the aisle.
Yeah.
I think she'll do just fine.
Yeah, as a governor, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm not going to give her the 7 or 8 that you're mentioning. But I do want to give Kathleen Sebelius credit, since we're talking about insurance, to where I think she really stood tall at the time. And that's when Anthem Insurance came into Kansas and attempted to take over Blue Cross Blue Shield. Three individuals saved us from that. You know, if Anthem would have ultimately taken over Blue Cross Blue Shield, we would have 1,500 less Kansans employed today, because they'd be somewhere in Indianapolis doing whatever it is they do. And the insurance rates would be going up big time, because Blue Cross Blue Shield's premium versus claims ratio is about 90% here in Kansas, which is excellent in the insurance industry. Anthem's return was 79 cents on the dollar. Big difference. Which means insurance rates would have gone up, a lot less Kansans employed. Governor, or Insurance Commissioner Sebelius, Democrat, former congressman, and Kevin Murphy, a strong Republican, former lawyer, were the three individuals that saved us from that Anthem merger. So, I want to give Sebelius a pat on the back. There's good and bad to be found in everybody, and she did a wonderful job in that respect.
And so, I think, Jim, that probably bodes very well for her as a cabinet secretary for HHS, because the insurance companies are the folks that she's mainly going to have to deal with in making health care go. And I think back to the United Health Insurance Fund. They pay their executive $1.6 billion, something like that. I just can't understand that at all. In a health insurance company, why they would pay somebody $1.6 billion.
Yeah.
You talk about the return on the premium. Hey, that's got to be one miserable company in terms of...
Well, you know, back in the Anthem debate, you know, this is when corporate CEO salaries were just starting to surface.
Oh, yeah.
And this goes back several years ago. And at the time, I think the Anthem CEO was knocking down $30 million a year.
Right.
The board members, I can't remember what their level of compensation was, but it was up there. And this is when all of this really started to surface. What are these people really making?
Yeah.
Whoa!
And when a lot of the companies like WorldCom and Tyco and those companies kind of collapsed and they found what the expected compensation was, everybody said, come on. These guys are flying the planes into the mountain and you're paying them as if they owned the mountain. Crazy.
John Arnold is with us, along with Denise Act, with TV 49 News, the news director. And we need to take a break when we return. We'll find out through John and Denise's eyes what the other top stories of the week were. What we're going to be talking about, jim.cates@cjonline.com. If you've got a question or a comment, or if you're here at the Roundabout Cafe, if you have a question or a comment, you can certainly step up and ask it. We would be delighted to talk to you. Stay tuned, more to come.
Did you know volunteering can be fun? Community service is for everyone. Young people, families, men, women. As a volunteer, you'll help your community and gain valuable skills. Network with others. Energize your life. Make an impact and have fun. Get in step with your community. Volunteer. Visit www.lionsclub.org.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says, just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
In November 2004, Jose was sentenced to 8 years for committing a gun crime. His wife and two sons were left alone.
Today I want to talk to you about being arrested.
My family has suffered immensely. They're the ones that really suffered the most for my decisions that I've made in my life.
What would you tell young kids?
Just think about your family first. Your family always comes first and your family is always going to be there for you.
When you commit a gun crime, your family serves the sentence with you. Gun crimes hit home. Brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Canada Drug of Topeka provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100. Or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody. We're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka. 272-6100.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJ Online, your source for interviews, community commentary, and news, live and online. Phone lines are now open at 295-1193 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Hey, before we get back to our guests, let's talk about my evening home away from home. And, of course, we're talking about Jeremiah Bullfrogs, 29th and Wanamaker. You know, I told myself, John Arnold, we've got a group that gets together every afternoon from 3 to 5. We play cards at Bullfrog. Friendly, I mean, it's just for fun.
Uh-huh.
And grins. And I told myself, once the weather warmed up, I was going to walk from home to Bullfrog's. I live 45 minutes from Bullfrog's, and I was going to do this once a week.
It's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did it yesterday.
Couldn't breathe.
But, well, I think rather than doing it once a week, I'm going to do it once a year, and I've just got it out of the way yesterday.
Check that box.
You could have three cigarettes on a 45-minute walk. You could have three cigarettes on a 45-minute walk.
I think I'm going to be driving to Jeremiah Bullfrog's, the 29th and Wanamaker route. I don't think I'm going to be making that walk again. But, folks, it's a great place to hang out. You know, if you're a sports fan, they've got TVs everywhere in there. And,
yes, they do.
They've got every televised sporting event known to man on one of their 55 TVs at Jeremiah Bullfrog's. Great food. It's just a fun, clean atmosphere. It's safe. It's just a nice neighborhood bar, frankly.
Can you get a beer there?
You can get a beer there. In fact, you can get more than one. I had, I had a couple last night. Yes, I did.
Stimulating the economy.
Yes, I did. Well, I was. Jeremiah Bullfrog's a great sponsor of Jim Cates and CJ Online. Denise Eck with TV 49 is my guest, along with John Arnold with the Metro News. And John's going to be with us on a weekly basis. Appreciate you doing that. You can almost walk here. It would be...
I could walk here. It's a lot less than 45 minutes, huh? Yeah.
Let's talk about one of the other top stories of the week. And Denise, John, we were talking about this off-air. Hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Big story in Topeka.
Right. The Road Runners.
A lot of interest.
And,
yes.
Broke Sunday into Monday that the owner of the Roadrunners had it and was closing up shop, and then she backpedaled from that a little bit, and what are we going to do, and who will come in and save us? And last night after the 6 o'clock news, we did an interview with the commissioner of the NAHL, who said that they had a signed letter of intent from some group that was willing to buy the Roadrunners and keep them in Topeka. And wouldn't say what the group was, and said that they were working it out with the Expo Center as far as some kind of a lease, some length of time.
Mm-hmm.
But that somebody was interested in taking it on. And so, you know, in any economy, but particularly in this economy, I'm dying to know who this group is and, you know, why they're willing to make a go of it. It's so challenging, and hockey does well in a lot of places and just doesn't in other places. And, you know, there are some diehard Roadrunner fans, but maybe not enough of them in town.
Well, but, you know, Denise, if you look at this league, I think there's, 20 teams in the league, something like that. Topeka's number 4 in terms of overall attendance. So, you know, we have supported hockey in this community. In fact, when we had the original Scarecrows, we were averaging close to 3,500 a game. And then the owner kind of went off his nut, you know, with the Scarecrows, and that's the reason that the original Scarecrows left Topeka. So, you know, I think that fan base is here because I think the Roadrunners were averaging, 1,600-1,700 a game, which put them, you know, at 4th in the league. And that's the reason Mary Larang moved the team from Santa Fe to Topeka, because she was drawing 300 fans, I think, in Santa Fe and 1,600 here. But... Denise, you've been covering this story on TV 49. John Arnold, I don't remember a column in the Metro that you've written about.
No, I haven't.
But Denise, act on a scale of 1 to 10. How important is hockey to Topeka, Kansas? I know this is a big story. A lot
maybe
of people are talking about
maybe
the Roadrunners.
Maybe a 4, maybe a generous 4. I worked in Wichita for a number of years where the Wichita Thunder hockey team was well-loved and well-attended and well-supported, and to my knowledge was never any talk like we've had with the Roadrunners. And I wonder if it's just geography, that you're so nudged in between K-State and KU, and they have such strong teams that that's where the fans go. And that's absolute speculation on my part. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I also worked for a time in Roanoke, Virginia, and they had the same problem where a hockey team would come in 2 or 3 years, they'd go out, someone else would come in and say, we're going to make a go of it. 2 or 3 years, they'd be out.
Yeah.
It's just this frustrating cycle, and so frustrating for hockey fans who just adore it. But, you know, unless you've got season tickets, you know, busy schedules and work and family, can you go to every game? Can you buy the T-shirts and buy the food? And sometimes no.
Yeah. John Arnold, you know, again, a quality of life issue, taking a look at the Roadrunners in Topeka. Is it important when we're out selling Topeka to a potential employer that might be moving 50 jobs to Topeka? Is this going to be on the Chamber's radar screen on a scale of 1 to 10? How important is this issue?
I think Denise got it at about a 4, I think, really. But, you know, it's probably more important to the Expo Center in
sure.
terms of keeping it open, in terms of whatever revenues it makes from hockey and the concessions and all of that, that make it something useful to the community, because the Expo Center is important. But also, there, it seems to me like there are a lot of hockey fans out there that are really zealous about being a hockey fan. And
you don't like hockey a little.
No, I don't think so. And
you love hockey,
you either love it or you don't care about
yeah.
it. And I can't, I'm always hesitant to ascribe my own particular feelings to somebody's, particularly to fandom kind of thing. Because I remember having a mayor one time who said, this is in California, and she said on one Sunday afternoon we were at a party, and she said, I am so in tune with the public. The public thinks exactly like I do, and I think exactly like the public does, and that's why I just feel like I'm such a good political leader. And then she said, and I so despise sports. And we were all going to a Super Bowl party where another 90 million people in the country were going to watch with us. And I just sat there and looked at her and thought, we got a little disconnect here. And so I won't say, you know, that hockey fans are wrong or anything. I don't particularly care for hockey. But I have other things that I'm interested in, you know. I like basketball and football, and we have a lot of that around here, and it's just a lot of fun. And I like, and so the Chiefs and KU and K-State and Washburn, we just have an awful lot of stuff. And hockey has to really compete with that. It's not easy, I'm sure.
What I do think is interesting and kind of encouraging is the fact that someone, and I believe the commissioner said it was an out-of-town group, that someone from outside is willing to invest in something in Topeka and keep it in Topeka. You hear so many people who say, oh, there's nothing here and nobody cares about it and nobody takes pride in it. And so I think it's encouraging that when one opportunity exits, that someone else would be willing to come in. If it was
sure.
my money, I don't think I'd be willing necessarily. But I'm really interested to see how this one unfolds, who it is, how much they're willing to invest, and how they're going to make a go of it when others couldn't.
But again, Denise, you know, if we're looking at this this team being fourth in the league in terms of attendance, with unique ownership over the past couple of years, and I don't know Mary Lorang well at all. She's been on the show, my gosh, it's been a year since she's been on the show. But unique ownership.
Sure.
Might be in that description. You know, if you got a good, solid ownership team, if we're already number four in the league, you know, this thing could be.
Where could it go? Yeah.
Well, we've
go.
Had, what, four different hockey teams and leagues here. And
this is number four, I believe. Two Scarecrows, one Tarantulas, and one Roadrunners. We've had four.
And
right?
each one has been successful in competitive, in their league and in whatever their division was. I mean, there are banners hanging in the Expo Center of the championships that the teams have won. And as you say, attendance, fourth in attendance. And you just wonder, you know, what's it take to make it work in Topeka?
Yeah.
I'd like to see it be successful because, as you say, in terms of some industry coming in and taking a look, the more things that are here that you can say, okay, this is good for our employees, this is good for us, the more they attract, as you say, quality of life thing. And so for those who like hockey, that's an additional attraction. You bet.
Now, this is not at taxpayer expense. No taxpayer dollars involved in this one.
Other than the
Expo Center. Which, yeah, is lowering our tax rate. You know, if we can put 2,000 people in the stands,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the Expo Center, you know, that's lowering our tax rate as far as that ultimate subsidy
sure.
we're making, you know, to pay for the Expo Center, because we're far from being in the black. as you know, facilities like that aren't constructed to make money. You just try to lower your losses as much as you can.
As much of a socialist kind of an organization it is, that's why it's there, to do other things than to make money as a private business. So we all fuss about socialism, but we're eat up with it, Jim.
Let's talk about a story that's also...
Didn't talk about that, did he, Denise?
Nope, we're going to move on. Let's talk about a story to where the taxpayers are looking at being bit, and big time, potentially, and that is the bus transportation story in Topeka. We have the TMTA, Topeka Metropolitan Transit Authority, been operating for 15 years now on a 3-mill levy. 3 mills. This year, the TMTA wants to up our mill levy from 3 to 7 mills. That's a 250% increase in 1 year. Something is really amiss here. But, you know, to run through the figures, the TMTA, their budget's roughly $9 million a year. And roughly 35% or so of their money comes from the feds, if you will. Roughly 35% of their money comes from the mill levy, the 3-mill levy. And 14%, a paltry 14% of their revenue comes from bus fares. Now, again, there's been a lot of talk in this community. The TMTA says, you know, to stay in business and to stay close to the 3-mill levy, we've got to cut off weekend, Saturday, and Sunday bus transportation,
right?
We can't afford to do this anymore. Been doing it for 15 years, but all of a sudden we can't afford to do it anymore. I think all of us are somewhat sympathetic to that worker that's really struggling to get by. They need to go to work on Sunday afternoon at Walmart, you know, stocking the shelves or whatever.
Sure.
They need transportation to get there. So there is a need for weekend transportation, getting workers from point A to point B. But are you disturbed, John Arnold, Denise Eck, by the fact that our bus transportation system, only 14% of the revenue produced is produced by people using the service? Now, John, you've worked for a number of cities. Are we unique in this respect? I was astounded by this figure, assuming that out of a $9 million operating budget to run public transportation in a community, that at least 50% of the revenue would be generated by people using the service.
No,
14%. Wow.
It's not unique at all. Now, I don't know if 14% is low or high or 25%. My gut feel is that about 25% is about the most that a transit system makes in terms of operating revenue. I started a couple of bus systems, Jim. In one city, we had two private bus companies operating, and they wanted a subsidy, and the city council said no after some period of time. And they said, okay, we're shutting down. We're not operating anymore. And so they asked me, they said, city manager, go run a bus system. Start a bus system and run it. And in 30 days, figure out how much it will cost, set it up, run it, and then let's have an election the following November. This was like 1st of July. Well, let's have an election the following November to see if the public supports paying for it. Well, that's a fairly quick little turnaround to try to build a bus system and make it work and then convince the public that you can do it. So I bought all these used buses from one of the companies. One of the buses was so old that when the mechanics took the oil out of it, the engine fell apart. The oil was holding it together. Another one was a bus that's engine, it was like a 49 Ford, and the engine was the size of a Ford Falcon. And in fact, when we ran the buses, the people in one of the hills, this was in Minot, North Dakota, the people had to get out and walk up the hill until the bus got to the top, then they'd get back on. Serious. Honestly,
awful.
We ran this bus system for 3 months, and then they voted on a 3-mill property tax increase to pay for it, and they voted for it 3 to 1. And very supportive, and it was a great system. Now, part of the thing, though, Jim, is we designed it in such a way that it could take the kids to school and pick them up and take them home. Instead of the school buses. The school buses had a limit, what distance, I think most school districts do, what distance you can ride the bus. And so we designed the bus system in such a way that the parents could have the kids ride the bus. It's a different era, though. It's 30 years ago.
And I don't know if parents would...
But you worked this out in conjunction with your local school district. You had a partnership with the local school district.
Wasn't much of a partnership. We just did it in such a way that it would serve them. And it served the parents. The parents were just delighted. Another place, I expanded the bus system and got all kinds of criticism because they would always, the commentary in the editorials would say, the buses are running empty. Well, a lot of times they do. And I swear, I told somebody at one point, I said, I'll be jogging down the street or riding my bicycle and a bus will hit me and they'll say, Arnold was run over by a bus and it was empty. But it's not uncommon, Jim. I've worked a lot with buses, and to have them expect to pay any significant part of the operating cost for the fare box is just not realistic.
Zasek, your thoughts?
I have to go back to the empty bus part. What's so frustrating for me is, you know, we are paying more now, or will be paying more in sales tax for the roads, and my property tax valuation went up the last time around, and, you know, I've never ridden that bus and never intend to. When my car's in the shop, I get a ride with a friend, and so... You know, that 14%, I think the people who use it should bear a little more of the responsibility. And when you talk about raising property taxes in these times, it is a very tough sell. Not that I'm not sympathetic. You know, I have a way to work, and I appreciate that, and I don't know what I'd do if I didn't. But there's got to be something else other than raising taxes, not more.
Yeah.
Not now.
Yeah.
Well, the feds are paying 35%, as you said, Jim. And they probably will increase that a little bit because I think all over the country we're having the same problems. And if we want to reduce the amount of pollution and if we have the gas problem, increase the public transit and people can ride it. One of the things you might consider at the station is having somebody ride the buses, all the different routes and see where they go and stuff. I'm going to do that myself because I've never ridden the bus here.
We did a story on that with a different spin. It wasn't so much about routes, but it was back when gas prices were so high.
Uh-huh.
When
yep,
you factor in what you're paying for... gas and car insurance and all of that stuff, maintenance, what's a better deal, riding the bus or having a car? And depending on the kind of car you had, at $4 a gallon, you know, we had a woman who did it who had an SUV, single person, no kids, driving a big SUV. It was a better deal for her.
Sure.
So we've done it from that standpoint. But, yeah, to see, okay, if you live here and your job is here on a Sunday afternoon, how do you get there? What I would love to see, in fact, would be maybe a restaurant owner or a business, you know, somebody take it upon themselves instead of asking the government, you know, let's put together a carpool and for the people who have cars, let's pull together on our own and see if we can get our people where they need to go.
Or buy them a bus pass.
Yeah.
If you're a McDonald's owner on Wanamaker and your employees work east of Topeka Boulevard, buy them a bus pass.
Yeah.
And that can do it very nicely. The other thing, Jim, about the bus system is even though at times they are empty, when gas is $4 a gallon and more people are riding it, we need that standby service. What happens if gas goes away? I mean, because you can't get it because not only is it too expensive, but they blow up in the Middle East, the Gulf of Hormuz or something, and you can't bring the oil over. And we end up saying, hey, the benefit of a bus system is the standby service. In one of my cities, Jim, we had a flood, and we had to evacuate 12,000 people.
But, John, if you're using it as a standby service,
uh-huh,
why can't we park this $350,000 bus when things are good, nobody's riding the bus, and replace it with a 12-seat minivan? Because a $350,000 bus is going to get 5 miles to the gallon, maybe. You know, a 12-seat minivan is going to get 25 to 30 miles to the gallon. And
studies have been done many, many, many times, Jim, on what's the cost of and cost effectiveness of running a smaller bus and so on. The biggest cost of running a bus is not the capital cost of that bus, because it lasts 10 years or so, it's $350,000. But the biggest cost is the operating cost of the driver and the gas and oil and the meat. Those are the operating costs that are the...
So you're trading, part. You know, you're still having one driver driving
still
a minivan as opposed to that big bus. So that's a wash.
Exactly.
But you're getting a much better deal as far as the initial cost of a minivan as opposed to a $350,000
sure.
bus.
Sure.
So that saved you $300,000. Your operating cost as far as gas and oil are going to be 20% of the cost for, you know, a minivan as opposed to a major bus.
Van doesn't last as long. They're not made as heavy duty as the big buses. Buses are in that kind of...
kind of visit. But the standby thing is if you ever have an emergency where you've got to move a lot of people quickly, having that bus system there is very important.
Bring the bus out of the garage and replace that minivan with a big bus that you've got stored in the garage that we're not wearing out.
Well,
you know, that major $350,000 piece of equipment hauling three people around.
Well, now you're talking about having in storage a $350,000 bus and driving a $25,000 van. So you do them both.
No, I'm saying if we've already have this bus, we've already purchased the bus. It's now out on the streets of Topeka. We've got the bus. Why not park it if it's only hauling a half a dozen people and replace that with a minivan? And now we've got a bus there to replace another bus that might go down that might wear out. Why are we wearing out these $350,000 pieces of equipment?
Why are we driving a $500,000 fire engine to a medical emergency?
That's a good point.
Yeah, same thing. Same thing. The main thing is you're getting the people there. How do you get the people there? You do it with the fire engine so that it can respond to something else at some time.
No,
well, don't from there. But anyway, this whole question is driven largely by the federal government in terms of how they fund. So if our bus system said we've got 12 $350,000 buses parked in the garage and we're running 12 vans, they'll say, okay, fine, you got too many buses. We're not going to give you any more money for buses.
Let's take a look at some of the solutions. One of the problems, of course, with the TMTA, that a year ago they signed a contract to where they've locked in their diesel fuel rate at $4.25 a gallon, whatever it is. When diesel fuel was at its peak, that's when our TMTA locked in. They were under a contractual agreement, I think, that runs for another 8-10 months, paying $4.25 a gallon for diesel fuel to where on the open market it's, $1.80 now, whatever the case may be. But that still doesn't justify an increase from 3 mils to 7 mils. Denise Echt, TV49, have you come up with any alternative solutions? Any of the reporters covering the story, have they come back to you as the news director and say, hey, you know, if they would just do this, we could cut this?
I wish we had the solution. The best I can come up with is individuals looking at other solutions, carpooling with neighbors, you know, employers taking a little responsibility for their employees. I want you to arrive safe and on time every time. What can I do as a private citizen to make that work? That would be my suggestion, but no, it sort of goes around and around in circles to let's raise taxes. Nobody wants to raise taxes. Why are the buses empty? And sort of fighting back and forth like that.
Yeah, and we've had a couple of our city council members on. We've got another one coming on Monday. And I've asked the question, how many people are we talking about, you know, that are impacted by this, that are using bus service on a Saturday and Sunday, not to get to and from grandma's house, I'm not concerned about that, but getting to and from a legitimate job. What are we talking about? Nobody seems to know. And my concern is that our city council, you know, and again, Denise, something I've talked about on the show on numerous occasions, how tough it is to be a responsible fiscal conservative. Because there's always pressure to spend more money, to fund more programs, the whole nine yards. And it's tough to continually say no to everything. And I hope our newly elected city council members especially aren't going to get wrapped up in the emotionalism of this issue, and they'll make a logical decision on whether, in fact, we need to continue funding at whatever rate to provide weekend service. I hope we make a logical decision rather than an emotional one. But
hard to say no to people.
It is. Very tricky.
If people have a job and you're saying, okay, we're going to cut out that service, and so they say, I can't do my job. I can't get there. And that's not good. In this particular economy, that's very bad. And the other thing is we have a fair amount, I think that number is something like 250 households in this community that are under public assistance. And many of those, most of that 250, are people who have some kind of disability, couldn't get a driver's license if they could afford a car. And they depend upon the bus system to get to the doctors, to get to the pharmacy, to get to the grocery store.
They do, but John, nobody's talking about cutting that service, eliminating that service, or reducing that service.
We're talking about the dial-a-ride part of it.
We're talking about Monday through Friday when you can go to the doctor's office.
Okay.
Doctors don't work Saturdays or Sundays.
Okay.
So, you know, as far as providing that basic need
to get Saturday and Sunday. The emergency room is open, and an awful lot of people use the emergency room because that's all they can do. They don't have health insurance, and so they take ride the bus to the hospital for the ER. So, you know, there are a lot of issues involved, and it's not a matter of fiscal conservative versus emotional. There's some really practical kinds of issues involved in terms of how it affects people of all different kinds. And I've wrestled with the issue of bus systems for 40 years. I think in every city I've been in, I've had the best bus system. The issues really don't change much. The cost.
But John, how long can we continue to go down this path of government being all things to
all
people?
Yeah.
It's getting more and more. I mean, when I started off in city government, Jim, 40 years ago, the city didn't spend much on social services. The county spent money on social services because they were the welfare agency. They ran welfare and all those things. The city did police, fire, streets, water, sewer, and basic things, parks and rec, maintenance, a few things like that. Currently, the city of Topeka spends about $2 million a year on social services. It's in the budget. It's in the general fund. It's supported by the property tax and the sales tax and all the revenue. You take away those, and you're cutting off an awful lot of agencies who do provide an awful lot of help to a lot of people who need that help. And every year, city council sits there and looks at those agencies, and they come around and they tell them about what the story is, what they do, and how much good they're doing. And
picture
how many
of grandma eating the can of Alpo out on the doorstep. And you know,
Meals on Wheels, that's one good one, you know. You take it around to, I don't know how many people. But yeah, it's those kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah, tugging at the heartstring, you know, type of stories. And,
nobody wants to say no. But it's like your own household budget. You know, I would love to go out and buy a new car and new jewelry, and I feel like I deserve it, and it's not in the budget. And, you know, some days it's steak and some days it's peanut butter, and that's how it is.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, you know, maybe one agency takes it one year and the next agency the next year. It's not easy. When you see how hotly contested these city council races are, I think, why in the world? Who would want to be in that situation? I certainly would not. What a tough job. What a tough job to be city manager. You know, it's...
Well, Denise,
I think a lot of it is saying no.
We'll get your opinion on this as well, because John's been a guest to where we've talked about the election results in the city of Topeka. And we talked about the fact, you know, that we had a tax issue on the ballot.
Yes.
We were electing a mayor. We were electing 5 of our 9 city council members, and had another minor ballot issue. So there was something for everybody on the city of Topeka ballot.
Sure.
77% of Topekans chose not to vote. How do we turn that around? Was the District 7 election, maybe this is a good thing for Topeka, that now we realize that, hey, one vote can make a difference.
You know, I'm always disappointed about turnout, but I'll tell you another number that surprised me. We track traffic on our website, ktka.com.
Mm-hmm.
That was the highest or second highest most clicked on story that week were our election results. So people don't care enough to leave their home and go vote, but they care enough to see who won, which is crazy. You know, we talk about, oh, does weather impact turnout? I'm not sure why people don't go. But they sure do care about how it turns out. I was blown away by that.
Should we make it easier for people to vote, or should people have to make some
sacrifice,
huh?
Wasn't hard for me to vote.
Bingo. You know, and I kind of like the idea personally that people have to make some type of a sacrifice to actually go out and have the privilege of casting their ballot for or against whatever the issue or candidate may be. But, you know,
this is something that stuck with me. I saw a movie on HBO a couple of years ago. A gal that I went to high school with was one of the actresses in it, and so that's why I watched it. Starring Hilary Swank, called Iron Jawed Angels, about the women's suffrage movement.
Cool.
And what those women went through so that I can go vote in, you know, whether it's paying for potholes or picking a president or whatever. After seeing that movie, I will never not vote. Even in the primary, even in the worst weather, what they went through for people like me, it's disgraceful to not vote.
Yeah,
it
good
is
for you.
Absolutely my civic duty. And I never would not do it. And for anybody who's curious about it, I would say go get it. I think it should be shown in high schools or grade schools when talking about civics. It was so powerful.
And iron-jawed what?
Iron-jawed angel.
Okay.
With Hillary Swank. I mean, they put him in jail. They tied him down, and they refused to eat, and so they force-fed him. I mean, physically traumatic things that they went through just so they could have a voice. And now women say, or anyone would say, I'm too busy, or I don't care, or one vote doesn't matter. That's disgraceful.
I don't know. You know, I kind of like the back in the early days of this country to where you had to be a white male property owner. What? Not my vote is going to count for more.
I think maybe you're beyond it.
Yes, those days have come and gone. But, you know, a statistic that came out of the primary elections back when we had 13% of the electorate actually the cast a vote on primary election day. 7 out of 10 people that voted on primary election day were over the age of 50. You know,
70% on primary day?
Yeah, we're over age 50. I haven't seen, you know, the statistics in terms of the general election. But 7 of 10 voters over the age of 50 that voted in the primary. Probably around the same ratio, I would imagine, in the general. I don't know for sure. But again, Denise, where are the 25, the 30-year-olds? Maybe they all need to watch the movie. I don't know.
I think a lot of them may be renting, living in apartments. I know that my urge to vote certainly changed when I bought my first house, when property taxes and my own wallet was impacted. You know, it wasn't just a personality thing. Oh, do I like John McCain or do I like Barack Obama? When it really was going to hit my bottom line, that's when I really, really started to pay even closer attention and got more aggressive about learning about the issues. So I wonder if it's because young people are not as financially impacted by it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, for sure, but I know that it certainly changed my habits and the strength of my opinions, perhaps, about a property tax versus a sales tax or what have you.
And it shows, you know, that renters, Denise, most renters don't realize they're paying property tax. It's a hidden tax.
Sure.
And it's a good point.
It is. And what Denise says about changing your attitude once you become a property owner, I think both the Republicans and the Democrats at the national level recognized that in the past 20 years, and that's why they changed a number of those housing laws, Community Reinvestment Act, Glass-Steagall Act, others that allowed people to do the whole housing bubble problem, because everybody felt like getting more and more people into home ownership is a good thing. Both sides, both Democrats and Republicans. And I agree, it is. They just went a little too far in terms of how they did it.
But then there's no more hidden taxes, which,
Yeah.
They send it to you in the mail. I can't hide from that.
That's true. Yeah.
We're just about out of time. John Arnold, your column this week in the Metro News.
Oh, I was suggesting that we fix the streets now. There was some conversation about the fact that they were going to wait until after they start collecting the tax in October, and so that meant they wouldn't fix the streets until next year, and I think that's silly. Get out there and issue some temporary notes and fix them now and pay them off when you get the money.
Now, John, the Metro is subscription only for now.
Yes, it is.
Now, where can you pick up the Metro? Do they have newspaper boxes around Topeka now? Does Denise have a few of these placed?
She has a subscription system going on. If you call 232-8600, you can sign up for it, and it'll be delivered to you.
And I'm sure there's some box locations around where you can pick up a copy of the Metro for 50 cents. I'm just not
You know,
sure
I don't know. I haven't seen those, and I haven't talked to Denise about whether that's in the plans or not. I suspect so.
Would you talk to her next Friday? Let's talk about that.
Absolutely.
Okay. Very good. Okay, Denise Eck, what's coming up on KTKA TV 49 this weekend?
We are following very closely the weather. We think severe weather, if it happens, is going to happen around dinner time Saturday, and the threat continues pretty consistently through at least Tuesday of next week. So we've got our meteorologist watching that very carefully, and we think there could be 6 inches plus of rain over the next few days. So we're looking at some of the neighborhoods that are often the first to flood to see what's being done in those neighborhoods. Are they ready? Are they, you know, moving their prized possessions from the basement to the attic? Those kinds of things. And, you know, you've been through it too. We think it's going to be the big one, and then luckily nothing ever happens. So it may not come to pass, but this is our first big opportunity of the season, and we want to be ready. We want to make sure people are ready.
Okay. And TV 49 is your website, because you're going to be following the weather on your...
KTKA CJ.com, and we will have up-to-the-minute watches and warnings on air and online.
Very good. Good to see you.
Good
Thanks for
you.
Coming
Thank
in.
You.
Don, good to see you.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Nice to be with you, Denise.
Nice to meet you, John.
Okay, we've got Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center on deck immediately following Trish Johnston and the news. Stay tuned. You're listening to Jim Cates at CJ Online, broadcasting from the Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Urish.
Good morning. Here's just a look of news that you can read in more detail in the Topeka Capital Journal and on CJ Online. Flags across the state will be flown at half staff from sunup to sundown Saturday in honor of fallen soldier Private Richard A. Dewater, Governor Kathleen Sebelius said Thursday. Department of Defense officials said Dewater, 21, of Topeka, was on a dismounted U.S. Army patrol as part of Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan when he was fatally wounded by an IED April 15th. His funeral is planned for Saturday morning at Roseburg National Cemetery, Pass, Oregon, his home. Governor Kathleen Sebelius' decision to veto Thursday a bill amending Kansas law on late-term abortions occurred at a critical juncture in her bid to become a cabinet secretary in the administration of President Barack Obama. Sebelius, who supports abortion rights but says she personally opposes the method of birth control, said the vetoed legislation likely would have been ruled unconstitutional by federal courts. Veto of the abortion measure triggered ridicule and praise from people on opposite ends of the political spectrum. A Topeka woman who died Wednesday night in a motorcycle accident near Lake Shawnee was a registered nurse and the mother of a high school student. Leanna J. Rain, 45, was a passenger on a motorcycle involved in a three-vehicle accident shortly before 8 p.m. at Southeast 45th and West Edge Road. She was transported to a Topeka hospital with serious injuries and later pronounced dead. Shawnee County Sheriff Officer said Rain was unresponsive at the scene. Rain is survived by Kyle Rain, her 15-year-old son. Sheriff officials said Mark Earl Ridge, 50, was driving the motorcycle when it and a 2004 Ford F-150 pickup truck collided at Southeast 45th and West Edge. The motorcycle was then struck a 2002 Ford Taurus. Ulridge was transported to Stormont Vale Regional Health Center with serious injuries. He later was flown to the University of Kansas Medical Center in Kansas City, Kansas, for surgery. Stay tuned. Jim Cates at CJ Online will return for another hour with Dave Jackson from Jackson's Greenhouse to answer all your lawn and garden questions.
Stay tuned. Jim Cates at CJ Online will be right back with the Jackson's Greenhouse Gardening Show. Have a question about your lawn or garden? Phone lines are open at 785-295-1150.
Huh?
You're on.
All righty. We're here.
We're on.
We're on.
Well, good morning, Dave Jackson.
Good morning. How are we doing?
We're doing well. Hey, I forgot to mention that today is Barbecue Friday. That's the Roundabout Cafe.
Oh, that's right.
Steve Foreman is cooking again today, so if you're a barbecue aficionado, today is Barbecue Day at the Roundabout Cafe, 21st and Urish.
Hardly any finer. Award-winning. Steve Foreman?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I'm sure it's award-winning. I'm sure it is.
Oh, it is.
Hey, tomorrow morning, are you to the Combat Air Museum for the pancake feed?
Are you kidding? I'd love to, however.
You're going to be a little busy.
We'll be a lot busy.
Yes, indeed. Preparing for the big rain, the big storm.
They say.
Denise Eck said this is going to be a tough one tomorrow night, possibly.
Really?
Through Monday and Tuesday.
Batten down the hatches, then.
Batten them down, yeah.
Cover your tomatoes, maybe.
This is going to be a good weekend to cover the tomatoes, huh?
Well, it might be. I don't know if they're talking hail or something. It doesn't take that much effort to go out there and either come get some hot caps and put them over there, or even milk jugs, if you got enough milk jugs.
But you're not strongly encouraging people to put plant tomatoes yet, though, are you?
People are planting tomatoes now. I give them the warning that they're about 50% safe at this point. We easily could have another killing frost yet, but folks want to get out there and
make it happen. But there's some risk involved.
Yeah. May the 10th, that's the day.
May the 10th.
The magic day where you can plant tomatoes.
It's a safe day, yeah.
Be 99% assured everything's going to be fine.
Right. All right, right. I see the legislature's not in session right this minute.
Let's see, we have one Representative Burgess. Good
yeah.
morning.
He's focused on getting some coffee here.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Oh, well. Right as we speak, of course, we are in our first hour of the pond building seminar. That's what's going on at our place today, right now. And that was the deal where you come down and register and watch a pondless waterfall being built, as well as a in-ground kind of a rock, a bubbling rock feature. We're going to do two features today. And and lunch is provided. It's a $20 fee to participate and watch the professionals do it. We have the people coming from Aqua One. Is that what it says on the hat?
Aqua One.
Aqua One, one of the premier company in pumps and pond building paraphernalia. They're out there. Their factory reps are putting that demonstration on right now. It's going to be right there west of the greenhouse in my grandma's old house, where my grandmother's old house used to be. The last original building was torn down this winter while we were in Hawaii, and it's going to become a pond.
Yeah, Dave Jackson, too late for somebody to come out. If this started at 9 o'clock this morning,
right,
as far as the pond building seminar, too late to
they
come out now?
Well, if they wanted to come out and participate, if they came out right this minute, they wouldn't have missed much. It's just the preliminary introductory stuff and making the hole, basically. That's what they would have missed. So.
Okay. How long is this going to run?
It runs until as long as it takes. We project it to be done between 3 and 4 o'clock this afternoon. It's an all-day seminar.
Okay.
With lunch included, break for lunch. After I leave here, I guess I'll be going to get some pizza from Godfather's or somewhere. And we got salads all lined up. We'll have a full meal.
Okay. So you can still show up. Plenty of time.
Plenty of time.
You get about 95% of the information provided.
Right.
You're gonna be there in time.
Right. But anyway, if they don't, we'll still have some handouts and some things to hand out later about on pond building and that kind of stuff. We're trying to get our feet wet, so to speak, in pond building a little bit.
I like that. Good.
Yeah, right. Anyway, we want to become what used to be the Puddles and Pads of Topeka, and Eric Wood, the former proprietor of Puddles and Pads, is there as the manufacturer's rep to help us.
How were reservations? Stronger than anticipated? About what you anticipated?
I didn't have any idea what was going to come on, but I think we've got about, this morning, I think we had about 12 paying participants, as
really?
Best as we could determine, yeah.
Really?
So, yeah.
I would think that would be strong.
Well, that would seem like it. We'll see who's all there, actually there when I get there. Some of the folks have made reservations without the money, so you know how that goes sometimes. I mean, they were called in for the reservation, but didn't have the money yet to us. So we'll see if the windy day today has scared anybody off, or they've found another commitment that they had to do. But anyway, that's what's exciting going on there today.
Now that's today only.
Today only, yeah. This
okay.
is we can only build so many ponds, and this is probably going to be the limit. Two in one day is about going to be it.
This is it. So, come out tomorrow, you can see the finished product.
Right.
But as far
it'll
as
be finished and running,
watching the construction of it, you got to be there today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It'll all be done. So anyway, what's new with you? Anything big?
What did we talk about today? We talked about Governor Sebelius. We talked about
what a piece of work.
Yeah, the confirmation slowing down a little on this, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's a foregone conclusion. There's no reason to not think
is it
so,
now?
Don't you?
Well, we had John Arnold, we had Denise Act with TV 49 on, and they said on a scale of 1 to 10 a week ago, they would have given the confirmation a strong 9.
Mm-hmm.
Today, 7.
Well,
and
yeah.
A soft 7, Denise Act, I think, said a soft 7.
6 to
things
7.
Things changed.
Well, it has, but all you have to do is count the numbers, and the numbers are there. They can I don't think they have enough numbers to filibuster. They don't have the numbers to filibuster that.
Except, you know, every day now, Dave Jackson, every day that passes, this is no longer a debate about abortion. This is becoming a debate about a third trimester abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Big difference.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a lot of pro-choicers that think abortion, you know, we can debate the date of when life begins.
The date of life, yeah.
But everybody is in agreement, I think, or most everybody, if that baby can live outside the womb.
Mm-hmm.
Then we take it out of the traditional abortion debate arena, a debate that everybody has strong feelings on, and 90% of those individuals are going to side on the fact this baby can live outside the womb. So we're no longer just talking about the pro-life movement getting involved in this issue. We're talking about the pro-choicers that
right.
say, hey, you know, first trimester abortion, it's not a life issue. Third trimester, it is. So now Governor Sebelius is potentially in a position where she's going to have 90% of the people that are really engaged in this issue opposing her.
True. But it's so, again, it's how well they get the message out. Yeah, true. But they've got to get the message out a lot stronger. And I don't know that that's really going to happen. I think she's probably Washington bound, which is not a bad thing for Kansas. Absolutely not a bad thing.
But is it a good thing for the country? You know, not getting into the abortion debate as such, but is it a good thing for the country?
Well,
she steadfastly supported third trimester abortions now for 7 years in Kansas. She is now going to be the person that is going to shape national health insurance, which means we're potentially looking at national health insurance that's going to pay for third trimester abortions.
Well, possibly. I mean, that's one scenario. However, if she is confirmed with so much opposition, it's how much power she'll have as a secretary as she goes through, because everything that comes out of her department then will be suspect from the get-go. And it's a big, when you're on hearings committees on all of that kind of stuff, if you have no trust for that person that's testifying before you, likely there's going to be a lot of resistance in committee hearings to whatever she brings forth. So as possibly a weak secretary, that's a good thing for the nation, possibly. That's just my outlook on it.
Disappointing in all of this, though, Dave Jackson, Bob Dole.
Uh-huh.
Because Bob Dole, you know, for years, was supposed to be, you know, the champion of the pro-life movement.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Dole has been hand-in-hand with Governor Sebelius ever since she hit Washington,
mm-hmm.
going through this confirmation process.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you disappointed?
Maybe Bob's trying to do Kansas a favor in getting her out of her state. I'll be generous. How's that?
Yeah, possibly so. But again,
I don't
putting
know.
Her in a position where she's shaping, you know, this national health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, tying it into the George Tiller story. I don't know. Somewhat disappointed, I guess, in Senator Dole that he would.
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
Be encouraging the confirmation of Kathleen Sebelius.
I think just probably is. I don't know. I have no idea.
I'm not going to worry about it this weekend.
I don't know Senator Dole very well.
This weekend, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to be out watching my seed potatoes and onions grow.
Hope so. Are they coming through the ground? Tell me about your seed potatoes. Are they popping up? How
not
long
yet.
Have they been planted?
Not yet. A week and a half.
Oh, okay.
So we should see something when?
Well, you should see something this weekend after the rain.
Good.
They should be coming through. You should start to, and if you dig some soil back from one of them, you should see some green coming off this at seed potato. But anyway, and that brings a good point. Those folks that really insisted on planting the seed potatoes in on March 17th, the traditional day, a lot of those folks are coming back in now that their potatoes rotted in the ground because the soil stayed so wet and cold. Depending on what kind of soil they had in their garden, of course, which, you know, the heavy clay soils, they wet and cold a lot longer than do the silty loam soils. But they're having to so it's not too late. And we still have a few seed potatoes left. We're the only people in this part of the nation that have seed potatoes. I'm out of Yukon Gold, but we do have about another 150 pounds of seed potatoes left. We still have fresh onion plants. Just got a shipment in. So they're looking good to plant. Still have the Vidalia-type onion plant. So we're, it's still time, plenty of time to plant any of that stuff. All through April, you're good to go. And as long as you can find good quality product.
The rains are going to start, what, late tomorrow afternoon?
Well, that'd be the scenario that I'd prefer.
And that way you can get to Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center early tomorrow morning.
Right.
Get them in the ground.
Right.
Time for the rains.
It's time for a break. Right.
Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, 1933 at Lower Silver Lake Road. And folks, again, if you've got a gardening question, you can email us at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Or you can always call Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, 232-3416. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Fairy residence, Tooth speaking. Sorry, there's no credit fairy here. What's that? He magically raises your credit score? Yeah, there's no credit fairy. But you can improve your credit by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Money under your pillow? Sorry, kids only.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. Brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw six war canoes drawn up on the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures, the eaters of men, cannibals. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. Four figures were tearing through the jungle. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, thinking only of his canoe. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
And we're back with Dave Jackson at the Roundabout Cafe, 21st Annuation. Don't forget, folks, today is Barbecue Friday, so if you're a barbecue aficionado, you want to make sure that you make it into the Roundabout Cafe. Folks, they're open 7 days a week. We're here five of those days, Monday through Friday, and Friday is always the day. We're here until 11 because we have Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, that comes on between the hours of 10 and 11 each and every Friday.
And happy to be here.
Hmm. I don't know what happened, why you weren't mentioned in today's paper.
Oh, well.
I'll assume the responsibility for that. We'll get that taken care of next Friday.
Okay.
Yes, we will.
Okay.
What else is happening in the wild, wacky, wonderful world of gardening? What else should we be doing this weekend? Getting, you know, whatever it is that we were planning on planting, getting it in the ground by at least noon tomorrow, if we can.
If we possibly can, that's right. This is absolutely, right now, the last opportunity for use your traditional weed preventer granules, like the team product in Fertilome, to prevent crabgrass from germinating ahead of this rain so that your chemical goes down just at the time that the soil is going to be warm enough to germinate crabgrass. Yesterday I was out at Salina, which is a little bit warmer than us, at Badon Raton's sleep-in inn and suite out there, reef seeding his that lawn out there at his new facility out there, and I could see that there was some crabgrass beginning to germinate out there. Now, Salina, of course, is about 4 to 5 days ahead of us, so and it was on a south kind of slope where it was getting plenty of heat, sandy soil. So that told me that we're right at the cusp of having crabgrass germinate here. So now is your last opportunity to do it with the product that's least expensive to prevent crabgrass. We have the crabgrass control with fertilizer, or we have it without fertilizer in half acre bags or in 5,000 square foot bags, depending on your lawn. You can prevent crabgrass in your lawn for 12 weeks for $10.99 for 5,000 square feet, $36.99 for half an acre if you don't need the fertilizer with it. So this is it. Final warning. And from there, then we move to a more expensive product that we have, of course, available with the Dimension in it that will kill crabgrass after it comes up. But it'll cost you more money. So just trying to save some folks some bucks here.
So again, this is the cost-effective way to go. Mm-hmm. But you need to have it down
ahead of
on the ground
can.
Ahead of the range this weekend, mm-hmm. which means you need to get to Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center today or early tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you look at the long-range forecast, we will have rain at some point in time over the next few days.
And crabgrass will germinate.
Yeah.
Sure will.
And then, as you say, then it becomes expensive. Yeah. Yeah.
More expensive. But anyway, we have a great product. Our product lasts twice as long in the bag, 2 to 2.5 times longer than the Scott's Halt product, which has been a different chemical in it that only has 6 weeks of effectiveness, and ours is at 12 weeks. So don't waste your money with the other product that puts you on out there doing crabgrass prevention again in the middle of June already. So,
let's talk about a problem I've got.
What do you have a problem
with? Well, I've got a problem with chickweed, henbit, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
that early on Nancy had picked up some Weed Be Gone, Weed Be Free.
Weed Out?
Weed Out.
No, Weed Free Zone. She picked out the
Weed Free Zone, that's
huh?
it. And got a couple of bottles of that.
Mm-hmm.
And where we put the Weed Free Zone down, mm-hmm. it worked.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't realize we had as big of a problem as we've got.
The sun's coming up later.
Oh, yeah. Our side yard, we've got a ton of chickweed, henbit, whatever. Same thing, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
It's all out of
the
same family.
Right. They're winter annuals in the... They just have a little bit different leaf, but the mode of growth is the same, and the mode to kill them is the same.
Yeah. Now, what do we do now? They're up. This chickweed has just taken over the side yard.
Uh-oh.
It's bad.
What? Don't you have any product left from what you bought before?
No. That's gone.
Okay.
And that product worked. We used that in the front yard, the backyard. We didn't realize we'd had a problem in the side yard.
Okay. Well.
And now, it's pretty well established. Probably a third of our side yard, it looks like, is being overtaken.
Well, now that the weather's warmer, the product that can take care of it is called Weed Out. Don't have to go. Weed Free Zone is about 3 times more expensive, and then you had to use that cooler weather to get a kill. But now the Weed Out, a pint is only $6.99, and that'll do 8,000 square feet. That with the warmer temperatures, the Weed Out will become effective on that. Now,
okay.
If you're going to try to beat the rain, for example, and put it on now, mm-hmm. then we'll have you mix some spreader sticker with it, and that's a product that makes sure that the spray will stay on even despite being rained on.
Mm-hmm.
It will stick that product right to the leaf. The rain won't take it off.
Yeah.
So you can do this safely ahead of the rain. Just as long as it dries. Once it dries on there, it's stick fast. Will not be rained off.
Yeah.
And so that product, while it works a little bit slower, it does work just as effectively in warmer temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
The Weed-Free Zone was Weed Out on steroids, basically. It was Trimec with Carfentrazone, which is a fairly expensive chemical, but it speeds up the process in cold weather by 5 times. And
mm-hmm.
that's why you were able to see such a quick reaction. The Weed Out, of course, has all of that in it except for Carfentrazone. But it's effective then in warmer weather, which is what we have now, 82-degree temperatures versus the 50s when you were putting that out.
Now, using the Weed Out now, Dave Jackson, is that going to solve my problem later this summer, this fall? Do I need to reapply it next spring?
Actually, the thing to do is, those are winter annuals, and they germinated, and they were tiny. You just didn't see them. They germinated last October.
Mm-hmm.
So You can reapply then, mid-October, late October, on warm, on a warm sunny day. You know, we get those. And you can reapply that weed at that time to,
okay,
to prevent this from jumping up in the spring. Do prevention a little cheaper than you can killing it as you did this spring when it was so bad already.
Okay. So I need to get the weed out now, down. And then this fall I need to come back, and that's going to take care of it for all time.
Well, for
or it'll
for
take care
spring.
Of it for the next spring. Yeah.
For the next spring, right. Depends on how much seed you have blowing in from the neighbors, how much seed. That seed can germinate in the soil for up to 5 years. So as the rains come and it comes to the surface, that stuff will keep coming back for a while, because I'm sure that in the past you kind of let it go to seed or something.
Yeah.
You probably have a plentiful supply of seed there for a few years.
Mm.
But
so
the other
just went on spring this October, next spring.
Right.
Still we're going to have some come up. There's still
probably
will.
The secret, of course, one of the secrets, of course, is to make sure that your population of fescue in those areas is good and strong. It will come up. It takes advantage of bare spot. That's where it's mostly going to be. If you have strong fescue in those areas, then it can't get a purchase in there. It can't come up. But so overseed. Labor Day weekend, that first 2 weeks of September is ideal. Overseed, put down the new lawn starter, the lawn food plus iron with it, get that grass up thick, and then your prevention is a whole lot easier from that point forward. So have to do it again. I don't know if you got your overseeding done last fall or not. You did, didn't you?
We did, and you know, there's parts of the yard where it went great. It was just the side yard. It just...
It did not get watered quite as much? Or
Dave,
what?
Pull your mic in a little.
Mic's in a little.
Thank
okay,
you.
There we go. How's that?
Better.
Okay.
We thought we did.
Okay.
We thought we had watered about the same. But
do
the
you?
Front and the backyard, everything's fine. But that side yard, it's just... We've got a challenge.
Okay. The other thing, if you're sending her in, bring in a soil sample so we can take a look to see if that side yard has a little bit of a, if that's a slope off to the side, it may have a different pH perspective, which would cause your seed to germinate but not thrive.
Yeah.
And you can get a real significant dieback of the new seedlings if the pH is low. Now, of course, we've been doing these free pH tests. It's been advertised and done hundreds, literally hundreds of pH tests, and find lawns in the 5.5 range, which is very detrimental, up to 7.6, which is too sweet on the other side. So
yeah.
Lawns have a great range of pH in the area, and your best grass is going to grow when your pH is between 6.5 and 7. So if you get a chance to bring in
soil samples, so
I'll be happy to do that for you.
We need to do that. So, folks, again, if you've got a challenge in a particular, it could be your backyard, side yard, front yard.
Right.
It all could be a little bit different, as you say, on the pHs. Bring
yeah,
in
okay.
a soil sample, and you can let the customer know what they need to do based
right.
on the results of the soil sample.
Yep, the pH, and we check out the organic matter and how the soil will absorb moisture, because when we do this pH test, I use filtered water to make a mud, so to speak. And so in terms of the way that your soil mixes with the water, I can tell whether how frequently you're going to need to water, whether your soil is able to absorb and at what rate.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a difference, too. Then your watering practices will make a difference based on your soil condition.
Okay.
Anyway, kind of fun.
So, folks, do that if you haven't. If you've got a challenge in whatever particular part of the yard it is, bring
yep.
that soil sample in. You've got to identify the problem before we can come up with a solution.
Well, it's certainly more cost effective if we can make the determination ahead. So, time for a break, he says.
It is time for a break. Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, here each and every Friday between 10 and 11 at the Roundabout Cafe. Stay tuned. More to come.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home.
Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse,
we're out to make your day.
Close your eyes in Chicago, and you can hear the sound of zebra braying in Africa. Look hard out your window in D.C., and you can see the snow-covered peaks of the Andes. The world is that small. We are that connected. Please visit Earthshare.org and learn how the world's leading environmental groups are working together. Earthshare. One environment. One simple way to care for it all. A public service message from Earthshare and the Ad Council.
I present to you three of the fiercest subjects ever assembled in the cage of doom. Algebra 2, foreign languages, and biology. Who among you will step up to their challenge?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Me too.
Sign me up.
Take on the tough classes now. You need them to prepare for college. Find out which classes you need at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with the Dave Jackson, Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, Roundabout Cafe, 21st and yours. This is going to be home for the next 25 minutes or so. If you have a gardening question, you can always email us at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Dave, I know something we're going to be talking about, I'm sure, over the next few weeks at length, tomatoes, because this is your big seller as far as somebody starting and planting a garden. I'm assuming tomatoes by far and away number one.
I would say you're right. Tomatoes are right up there as the people's favorite vegetable to grow. And let's face it.
What would be number two?
Not sure whether that's peppers or whether this year. I mean, we've sold tons of seed potatoes, and I don't know maybe that whether that's number two or not. But we generally we consider peppers to be number two because usually when people got a flat of 12 to 15 or 18 tomato plants, then there's always going to be a four-pack or two of peppers, sweet bells. And for the people that do the salsa, of course, there's going to be a couple of hot peppers in there.
Yeah.
And we, of course, grow every kind of pepper that I can imagine that we can find just to keep everybody happy. There's 25, 28 different hot peppers on our list. Same with sweet peppers, about 25 or 28 different varieties.
And you plant peppers and tomatoes about the same time?
Pretty much the same time, yeah. They both like warm soil temperatures and don't do much growing until the soil temperature reaches 60 degrees. So,
you want to run through tomatoes?
Say what?
Some of the various varieties of tomatoes. Somebody that's looking for the big ones. You know, the big tomato slice to put on a hamburger.
Right. The record holder in this area, of course, is Delicious. Mm-hmm. It's an old burpee variety. It goes back a long way. And that can produce you a 2 to 4 pound tomato. We're talking big tomato.
Wow.
Not so many as, of course, one that's a traditional slicing tomato. Like, of course, Jetstar is our number one seller. Has been since the early 70s.
What makes it so popular?
Well, it's just a nice quality in terms of the skin quality, disease resistance, size, perfect for slicing. It's a good 6 to 8 ounce tomato. And taste. It is somewhat milder, and the seeds are somewhat smaller than regular tomatoes. It's a really good, great tomato. I have some of my customers tell me it's not quite acidic enough for them to can as successfully as they would wish. I'm not sure whether that's a problem or not, but that has been a customer comment. three top producer of tomatoes, that it's by far our most favorite. I don't know, the name caught on. It was developed in the late 60s over in New York by the Harris Seed Company. And
it's your big seller. It's the Jackson's. This would be the big seller.
I think it probably is anywhere. It overcame Big Boy about 20 years ago. Big Boy is still a big favorite. And that's another big tomato, of course.
That's your number two seller?
Probably. But it's not my number two recommendation for sure. But
you know, why wouldn't it be number two? Why wouldn't it be your number two recommendation?
Because it doesn't.
The downside would be what?
It doesn't have the disease resistance that the Jetstar has in terms of the verticillium, fusarium wilt resistance. And it doesn't have the production capabilities that Jetstar does. It's a great looking 10 to 12 ounce tomato, nice big red, bright red slicer, nice tomato. But in terms of overall production, not quite there. And it's a huge vine. It needs a lot more area to plant because it'll get if you have the cage and stuff to keep it, it'll easily get 8 feet tall in your lawn, in your garden if you've got
really?
A big garden. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. If you,
I guess we've never had Big Boys then.
You might not have, or you don't have the fencing capability or whatever for them to grow up along that fence or something, but they get huge.
Good night. Okay, that's the number two seller. Number three would be?
Probably in the recent years, the grape tomatoes have come on really strong. Juliet, sugary. You know, 10 years ago, you didn't even see a grape tomato in the grocery store. But now these grape tomatoes have taken the market by storm.
And what's a grape tomato?
It's a kind of a large cherry-type tomato with a grape shape, in other words, a little bit longer, not perfectly round, but longer than it is circular.
Uh-huh.
They just so anyway, we've got.
Is that more of a salad tomato then?
Yeah, it's a salad tomato. It's what you see on salad bars now. So anyway,
nothing you're going to put on a hamburger. It's not a hamburger slice type of tomato.
No. It's going to be a little 1 to 2 ounce tomato, but that's probably taken over as number three at this point.
Okay.
And all the other cherries in there with it, of course. There's.
You say that Big Boy's number two seller, not one that you recommend. What's the sleeper tomato out there that doesn't sell that well and should?
Oh,
because of quality, a number of reasons. It should be in the top three, but it's down at 5, 6, 7, or 8 or whatever.
Probably Amelia. That's a new variety. Amelia, A-M-E-L-I-A, the girl's name,
mm-hmm.
is really a good tomato. And market gardeners are using that just a lot at this point because of the production and quality. And that's probably the one that I would say doesn't sell near as many as it should.
That would compare to the Jetstar then as far as production, number of tomatoes on?
Right. It's a determinant, a semi-determinant type of a bush where the production is going to be concentrated in a more of a compressed time zone, and where Jetstar is an indeterminate variety that keeps on growing. Semi-determinant ones are ones that after they reach a certain point, the bush reaches a certain point in size, then they quit sending out new growth shoots, and their season is a little bit more limited, but the production is heavier.
Which would be Amelia's then. Their season's limited,
mm-hmm.
So
but they're heavier production during that time.
Plant Amelia's May the 10th. You pull your first tomato off the vine when?
Probably July the 15th. 10th or 15th of July.
So 60 days.
Yeah, from planting a.
That's pretty much true of all tomatoes, isn't it?
Well, of course.
60-day cycle?
No, Early Girl, for example, are going to get you tomatoes about 10 days or 2 weeks sooner. I mean, if you plant an Early Girl May the 10th, you're going to have tomatoes 1st of July. Early Girl hybrids, one of the first hybrids that was bred solely to be the first tomato out there, right? And it's a 58-day. And while the other one is considered to be a 72 to 76-day tomato, we're talking Amelia, Jetstar, and those kinds of tomatoes.
sacrificing quite a bit in the way of quality then?
Well, early girl is going to be a smaller tomato in the 4-ounce range, 3 to 4-ounce range. They're going to be not quite the big slicers. And the quality of tomato is not quite, the fruit's not quite as good looking. On
or
the other hand, early girl.
Type of tomato then?
Yeah, it could be, if you wanted. But trouble is with that is that they're going to be ready ahead of the peppers, trying to use them as salsa tomato. But at least it's a tomato, a fresh tomato that you can have on your plate and ready. You can slice in wedges or do something with for your 4th of July festivities. And the other good thing about early girl is it will produce, it'll continue to produce the whole year. Never with a great, nice, big-sized tomato, but it will produce all the way through till fall.
And the Jetstar will do the same, won't it?
It will start producing mid-July,
and it'll continue into the fall?
Yeah, it's going to be 10 days, 12 days later than early girl, and that it'll continue to produce. Now, with the caveat, of course, in Kansas, when we get temperatures above 90 degrees during the day and in the 80s at night, the pollen on tomatoes does not, it doesn't pollinate, so you won't have any fruit production. Those flowers will come on, burn off, and fall off for a period. So during those times, then you're not going to have some fruit production reliably all summer long just because of the temperatures that Kansas presents to our tomato crop.
But then in September, they'll
pick
back up.
Right.
Away you go again until the first big frost.
Right. And, of course, then the trick is keeping your tomatoes from freezing in the late, getting touched by a light frost or something. You can do some protection. And keep them going for a while, and then when they do produce a temperature in the mid to lower 20s, then get out there, pick the green ones, and you can ripen those slowly in the house until Christmas.
Well, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Jetstar, how many tomatoes will a Jetstar plant produce on the average? In Topeka, Kansas, if you're planting a Jetstar tomato plant.
If you've got good soil and take good care of it, add some fertilizer to the around the once it starts producing, fertilize every 2 to 3 weeks. It's not uncommon to get 40 or 50 pounds off of one plant.
Really?
Really.
I had no idea. Now, is that true for most, if you're looking at the grape tomatoes, the Amelias, the early girls, 40 to 50 pounds?
Well, no.
Or is Jetstar the exception to the rule?
Well, it's one of the top three producers, like I said, in terms of quantity of tomatoes, and so and their percentage of what we call number one grade tomatoes, the percentages are very high. So, but
wow.
Yeah, an early girl is going to produce probably 20 pounds, I would suppose, and of course a cherry tomato is going to produce hundreds of 1-ounce tomatoes, but you need 16 for every pound. So
yeah.
So anyway,
but 40 to 50 pounds.
You can get that. I've had customers come in and tell me that they keep track of those kinds of things. They'll get that many from it throughout the season from a Jetstar.
Okay. What do you need, when you're planting tomatoes for the first time? May the 10th, following Dave Jackson's instructions, the best day of the year to plant tomatoes, May the 10th. Do you use Miracle-Gro? Does that work? Do you have, or is Miracle-Gro something that is still out there on the market? It's something I was familiar with years ago.
Miracle-Gro is still out there. It's not owned by the Stern family anymore, but when you plant the tomatoes, the Fertilome root stimulator will eliminate transplant shock. That's a light dose of fertilizer, 410 to 6 or something like that, as together with a little bit of root hormone and a vitamin B complex, all for root development, which is what you're trying to do, is quickly establish your root system. Now, if you really want to get with it, we have a tomato and vegetable product for a mycorrhiza root bacteria that will enhance even more the root development throughout. It's a bacteria that infects the root system that you can use when you plant. I do not recommend Miracle-Gro at all for a couple of reasons. One, they have not ever improved the quality of the original product. It has excessive salts in it. The ad that they always show with you spraying the plants with the with the fertilizer with one of those Miracle-Gro feeders,
mm-hmm.
spreads disease. That's not there's not enough nutrient uptake in the leaves to justify the expense of the fertilizer. You're more apt to burn your leaves or spread disease by spraying them. I mean, the plants are fed through the roots. It's the root. It's the soil, not the leaves, except to take in sun. That's important for fertilization. Foliage fertilization has long ago been found to not be an effective way to spend your money. The Fertilome product also, then once the tomatoes have set and you have tomatoes thumbnail size, then you start with the Fertilome Gardener Special as a side dressing in a granular. And the reason is the granular, there's a certain small percentage that's fast-release nitrogen for your tops, and then the rest of it's a slower-release fertilizer. With Miracle-Gro, you get virtually all ammoniacal nitrogen, which is all fast-release, like giving a kid sugar. Runs around like crazy for 3 or 4 hours, and that's it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's the other reason for not using the Miracle-Gro product. We just feel like our fertilizers are based more on science than is the Miracle-Gro product.
Well, I know. I was cleaning out the garage last weekend. Mm-hmm. Ran across some Miracle-Gro.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how old it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you eventually reach
says,
a point.
If it says, no, it'll be good forever as long as it hadn't formed a cement block or something but and got moisture in it. But if it says Stern's Miracle-Gro, it's a fairly old box. Miracle-Gro, the family that developed it, invented it, and stuff,
yeah.
were bought out long ago by big conglomerates and they're no longer a You know, the original developers are no longer a part of that tradition of Miracle-Gro.
But if we pick up, you know, some whatever it may be at Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, and you've had some of this stuff on the shelf for 10 or 12 years, generally speaking, still good?
Still good, yep.
Most of this stuff just doesn't wear out.
Well, fertilizers don't.
Over the course of time.
Fertilizers don't.
Fertilizers are good. 10 years down the road, if mm-hmm. you've still got a bag of fertilizer at home that's 10 years old.
As long as it hadn't gotten wet, it's going to be okay.
It's still just as effective as it was 10 years ago.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty much inert until it's the moisture contacts it and it breaks, starts to break down.
Okay. Okay.
But, and you can tell that when you open the bag. If it's all blocked up, then you know it's not going to be much good.
We're due for a break.
Yep.
Boy, are we ever. Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center, 232-3416. If you've got a gardening question, you can give Dave Jackson or anybody at Jackson's a call anytime over the course of a seven-day week, because now you're open 7 days a week.
Always open 7 days a week.
Yes, you are. 1933 Lower Silver Lake Road. When we come back, let's talk about what's going on at Jackson's tomorrow on Sunday.
Okay, great.
We'll do that. Stay tuned, folks.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse,
we're out to make your day.
I want to change some things. I want to help more kids graduate from high school.
I want more of my neighbors to have access to health care.
I want to change what I see around here.
United Way is creating real, lasting change where you live by focusing on the building blocks of a better life: education, income, and health.
I just want to see more smiles on my sidewalks.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. For more, visit UnitedWay at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Some teens have trouble just making it to graduation.
If it wasn't for my best friend Enrique, I would have just been out working already right now, like working at a factory, you know, making little pay, like $5. I would have been like one of the other kids there, like dropouts. He tells me, don't do it, please don't do it, you know. If I wasn't a real friend, I would have never told you this. You know, I would just keep shut and just let you do it. He opened my eyes even more.
Give Danny the boost he needs to graduate. Go to boostup.org and send him a message in your own words. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
You're on.
All weekend long, right?
You're on.
We're back. Yeah,
we're back. You're
with
back.
Dave at Jackson. Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center specials this weekend at Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. What's
still
going on tomorrow?
Well, today, tomorrow, we've still got our orphan trees on special. These are the ugly duckling trees that will grow up to be beautiful swans. They're just not so pretty right now. We have those at 75% off. So these trees are basically $11.99 now instead of $45. And we had some folks come out and buy 15 of them, as a matter of fact, yesterday. And I've still got a couple hundred left over there that we've culled through that just need a new home. And we're practically giving them away just to have them out of there so we don't have to throw them away or something. I hate to throw away a perfectly good tree. Just because it's ugly now doesn't mean it will be when it grows up. It'll be a beautiful tree, and we've got a great selection of those over there on the west side of the parking lot by our waterfall at the northwest corner of the property. Special group. I need to get out of there because we need the parking, because business has been so phenomenal at Jackson that we don't have room enough to park everybody without my employees parking across the street.
That's what you were saying while we were on break, that you've never had an April as good as this one.
So far, that's true. We're on track to have a record April.
Dave Jackson, is it because, you know, and we just started talking about this while we were on break, is it because of this economic downturn more people are planting vegetable gardens? Is that the reason your business is just absolutely on the upswing? Would it be vegetables, seed sales, tied into more practical plantings, if you will?
Seems like what the people are driving towards. They're, like you mentioned, you've expanded your garden spot mm-hmm. this year. Many people come in and tell us that. We've got people coming in saying, well, they're going to plant a garden and show their grandkids how a garden grows and get them in the gardening mode right away. So there's... seems to me more people are planning on spending a little more time around the house and enjoying their own environment than in the past, scaling back maybe travel plans. I'm not sure. But also, while they're in there, since they're going to be at home more, they're trying to upgrade their landscapes a little. In terms of the new plant material and things, 20, 30 years ago, people planted evergreens everywhere around their house just because that was what the plant material of choice was at that time. Since then, there's been such a development of beautiful flowering shrubs that are low maintenance and colorful that there's a great changeover. We sell probably only one evergreen for every 10 flowering shrubs now we sell, where 30, 40 years ago, it was just the opposite. You surrounded your house kind of with evergreens and then put something as a flowering shrub if you had room for it somewhere off on the corner. But now we've got such great genetics on new plants that folks are doing it. Plants are no more expensive now than they were 5 years ago because of the economic downturn. We're able to purchase from what we don't grow. From nurseries that are running sales to try to stimulate growth, and so we've got really some great bargains going on. This is also the last week for our knockout roses to be three roses. They're regular $24.99 to $29.99 each. They're three for $49.97, and we grew these ourselves, and they're in beautiful bloom. We're bringing them up from our back greenhouses. And there's two new colors this year, the double pink and the sunny yellow. We talked about that, I think, a little bit last week. This is through, the sale goes through next Tuesday. We had, it was a 2-week sale. So that's, also one of the sales going on this week, besides the trees. And then, I don't remember any other sales exactly at this point. We'll have a new sale next week, though. Trust that.
It sounds like you're getting more and more into landscaping as well. And I'm sure you've got landscaping professionals on staff.
Right.
If you're open, there's somebody there that can intelligently discuss landscaping.
That'd be the hope.
Yeah.
That'd be the hope. Now we,
you know, there's so much to take in consideration. One, you know, if you live in a neighborhood that's prone to burglaries,
yes.
Landscaping's important. What you plant beneath your windows.
Right.
Make sure nobody's going to climb up.
Right.
Come into your house through your windows, and that takes a special type of plant.
Well, it does. You're right. The barberries and some of the stickery plants, even the knockout roses with thorns, will discourage intrusion, significantly so. And depending on how high your window is up from the ground, we have short, medium, and tall plants that will prevent intruders from coming without blocking the view of the window. So that is a consideration, a good one to consider. While we've still got just a couple minutes, want to make sure that everybody gets out to see the Every Women's Resource Center, the Designer Showcase House, which is just down here on Urish and Huntoon, a half a block east on the north side of the road.
That's going to be open for how many more days?
That's open till May the 16th.
Okay.
It's about a one-month run.
Okay.
And it's Jerry Whitmer's home, and it's on the same ground that the Metro Castle is, where the grapes are. Matter of fact, the driveway's lined with grape bushes all the way to the back. And we're asked to do the landscaping for the front of that this year, and have done the front entryway as well as everything around the house and all of the berms that are around the house. And it's just a great environment to just go out there and walk around, plan on spending a couple hours out there. Have lunch. They have a tent set up for lunch. You can purchase a glass of wine and walk the grounds and just kind of enjoy what's going on out there. And the designers have just done an absolutely knockout job. They're fabulous. And we had to overhaul an existing landscape. It wouldn't have been what we wanted to do in terms of an all-new landscape, because we had to deal with some of the problems that were already there and the owner's reluctance to start with a clean slate, so to speak. So we did fill in and tried to enhance what was there and remove what was absolutely overgrown and needed to be out of there. But anyway, it's attractive and a fun time for people, and it's for a great cause, of course. All the monies are donated to the Every Women's Resource Center. It's their only fundraiser of the year, and so I encourage everybody to get out there and see the landscapes for sure, see the inside.
Folks, check it out, and again, that's at the corner of Huntoon and Urish, just right north of the Roundabout Cafe. And when you finish there, come down to the Roundabout Cafe. Check
right.
out one of the Danishes here.
Right.
Check out a cup of coffee.
That.
Just check out.
Or the barbecue
cafe.
Today, man.
Dave Jackson, we will look forward to seeing you next Friday.
Okay.
At the Roundabout Cafe. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Folks, thanks so much for listening. You have a great weekend as well. We will see you Monday.